Welcome to Dread, Fright, and Brew, where your favorite horror movies are paired with craft brews and ciders from the Pacific Northwest and beyond. Your hosts this evening are Aaron Hatfield, Grace Schrick, and Lee Despain. Fear goes better with beer.
This is fun. This is going to be cool.
Oh, yeah, shit, no, I know, this is freaking going to be amazing, man. I don't even know where to start.
Beer. I know where to start. We should start with our introductions.
Hey!
Hey! So, what we got going on here? Episode 4.
Is it 4 already?
I guess this will be, yeah.
I don't know,
they grow up so fast.
But more than that, it's going to be our Halloween season special episode spectacular limited edition signed autographed copy.
Wow.
Which is good for we drink a whole lot of beer.
Yeah.
And we're going to be useless by the end of this.
Yeah, we're going to change some things up here this time around.
We are. We're changing the format entirely for this episode to honor our favorite season. At least I'm speaking for all of us, but I'm assuming this is probably our favorite season.
Fresh hop season?
Yeah.
That's part of it.
God damn it. Oh,
okay. That is part of it. No sun season. Look, it's raining finally season. Halloween season.
Well, we differ in opinions on that part.
But yeah. Yeah, I just found this out. Lee likes the sun.
What is wrong with you?
Oh,
I don't know. Yeah,
he also doesn't like hops, so I never trusted him anyway.
Yeah.
Weirdo.
You're a pod person.
Right? I am a podling.
You're a pod person.
A little podling.
Weirdo.
So yeah, Halloween special episode. We're going to change this up a little bit. We're going to cover more beers and more movies, a lot less in-depth, just have some fun with this. So what we're going to do tonight is our top favorite. I just coined
that's
that phrase.
Good. That's a new word.
So our top five favorite, our favorites, movies that we have to watch for this to be an enjoyable Halloween fall season.
Yeah, the ones
for us
that really evoked that. This is Halloween, man. This is what got me into it. This is what I want to see every year. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm very much that way, where I have to watch the same movies every year to just fully encapsulate the whole thing. And then, of course, a lot of extra ones as well. But we're also going to do our top beer. So the one beer that when we see it hit shelves, we are excited. We're overjoyed. It means the season to us, or at least sets up that the season is upon us finally. And then we're going to do probably our most controversial subject for this evening, which is the pumpkin beer.
Yes, the pumpkin edition.
The gourd, the yam.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's pretty contested whether people even feel those should be beers.
Oh, best part is going to be making our little guest star buddy drink pumpkin beers. He hates
yes. them. Yes. We have to drink them all. So we're all going to give you our top favorite pumpkin beer of the season as well, which I have to say was harder than I thought it would be. I think I've tasted probably only about 10 pumpkin beers this year. I usually have 6 or 7 a year, but actually sitting down and tasting them and trying to find one that I was excited to talk about was a lot harder than I thought it would be and a lot easier than I thought it would be, because it turns out the one I've liked all along was just the one.
That was it.
The rest were very underwhelming.
It's one true love.
It totally was.
Yeah, and this is going to be totally new for me. I actually have not dove into pumpkin beers ever.
Wow.
I generally avoid fruit beer festivals, although, I mean, there are some good ones out there. But so this was kind of cool, I think more so because of all of the pre-tasting that I got to do over the last week or so.
That's usually most of the fun.
Yeah.
It's research.
Yep. Research, exactly.
Research. Grueling.
When my recycle bin is full of research, I know I've done it
my
right.
This was
a super, super tough episode. Top five beers. How do you pick that, man?
Top five movies?
Top five movies. Yeah. How do you pick that? I mean, how do you pick? Yeah.
It wasn't easy as I thought it would be. I mean, some of them just were instant, of course, and then other ones, I don't know. We'll probably have some honorable mentions at the end, things that we just have to talk about that.
Well, yeah, because also we did top five horror movies for the season, because I have a whole slew of shenanigans movies that I have to watch to get me in the Halloween mood. But this list is just the actual, like, horror movies.
Yeah, and that's our way of keeping it Dread, Fright, and Brew. You know, we've got to make this horror movies and beer for all of you guys. That's why you subscribed, and that's the stuff we love to talk about. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely movies outside of that spectrum that are fun for the season. But before we get too deep into this, I think it's time we give a shout-out to Rose.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The voice of the intro, sort of the thing that sets the pacing for what you guys are listening to. Rose was kind enough to come in and do a little voiceover for her. She happens to be my gal, which was super awesome for her to do because she hates horror movies. Yeah. Maybe hates a strong word, but
how did I not even know that when we were having to record the voice
of
our
intro? Idiots.
Yeah,
that's funny. That's
which is funny. Is perfect because I mean, you know, you always got that sort of that female victim / I don't know, femme fatale or something like that in horror flicks.
Don't you guys, like I'm a victim. I'll cut you.
No, believe me, I would never.
But it is. It's a trope of horror cinema. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
So to have her in doing the intro to it, which she absolutely loved,
and absolutely nailed.
She had a lot of fun with it. Yeah.
So anyways, thank you, Rose.
You're awesome.
We love our intro. Speaking of intros, I'm Aaron.
Hey guys, I'm Lee.
I'm Grace.
Let's do this thing. So the way we're going to rock this out is we're going to start with Grace's favorite beer of the season. I see that
there's
we
no
were
such thing.
Supposed to pick one beer, and she has, what, four?
Four?
Bottles?
No.
I see four bottles.
Technically, it's one beer, but there's different versions.
Different versions.
The true beer.
Seeing what beer it is, I think four versions of that might make this podcast very short.
Technically, there's three. There's a duplicate bottle, just in case we need more.
Oh, just in case. I think we're safe.
Put your big boy pants on. It's going to be okay.
All right, tell us about your beer.
So, for my kind of beer of the season, I didn't really go the traditional fall thing. I went Sierra Nevada Narwhal because it's a fantastic beer. It always comes out this time of year. I actually just got the newest batch of 2017 delivered to my store today.
Nice.
So it just got released. It always comes out right around this time of year. And it's kind of what gets me in the mood for just jumping right back into my dark beers. I've always loved dark beers more than anything, and I drink them year round, but fall, it's my jam.
Totally.
So I figured, why just do the fresh one? Because I'm one of those nerdy little beer hoarders. So I happen to also have on the table here a 2014 Narwhal, and then also a barrel-aged 2014 Narwhal. just for the sake of completion.
Oh, yes.
It's going to be okay, yes. Aaron.
Yeah, I'm shaking a little bit. I don't know if you can hear me shaking a little bit, but yeah.
He's crying. It's happening. There's tears.
That's true.
So Sierra Nevada, if you don't know who they are, I don't know what rock you've been under, but it's a really big one. You should Google them.
They've been around. Sierra Nevada did hops back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now we're, you know, moving on to dark beer, so I think that's great.
They still do hops.
Okay.
They do everything.
Yeah.
Because they're Sierra Nevada.
So, speaking of being under a rock.
There's hops in an idea of stout.
Lee, Mr. Homebrewer since the 80s, hops are in a lot of beers.
I promised that I was not going to harp on the hop things anymore, but I just couldn't help it when you brought Sierra Nevada up.
I'm going to yell at you with German beer law from 1516, where there was hops in everything by law.
That's not a bad law.
All right, let's pour some beers.
But anyway,
let's
pour some beers. So, let's start with the fresh. So this is an Imperial Stout. Sierra Nevada has been around since 1970. Ken Grossman, who is one of my like heroes, and actually has poured me this beer twice at various festivals because I'm a dork. A little bit of a fangirl. But yeah, they're one of the older breweries in the U.S.
Thank you.
And they started something. And I think that's part of the reason this beer is so special to me is they really... What the hell is that?
Oh, no. I forgot. This is an episode, after all. So Lee, of course, drinks from a different drinking vessel.
Did you make this
yourself? No.
Every
did your child make
episode.
This?
Yeah, what is that?
Look, man, after a long night of murder and slashing and bloodletting, I just want my good old coffee mug in the morning to pour beer into and forget about the night's activities.
Why don't you describe this mug for everyone?
Are you describing this?
No.
Unless, of course, it's going to bring charges on you.
Here,
and
you're
also, you missed an apostrophe.
All of your guys is just, okay, just.
You don't have any beer in it.
Oh,
Jesus.
Oh, man.
I like that you white it out.
All right, describe this thing, because people have no idea what's going on here.
White out on the barcode. What the shit, Leland?
So it's just a white coffee mug. I actually didn't make it. There's a company that sells these. I got this a while back. Thank you. When I wanted to send a message to my coworkers. And so this is the bring that mug over, Juan.
Juan needs beer.
Juan needs beer.
Yeah, we didn't introduce Juan.
We didn't.
My Best Friend in the World and Grace's Significant Other. I was going to say Better Half, but I'm not sure. is joining us at the table this evening. Also making this an extra special.
Yeah, this is very cool. Oh, that's so good. But yeah, so this is just a mug I got a while back. And somebody actually makes this mug, and they just do this serial killer murder blood-smeared coffee mug that has a handprint on one side, and then it says, "Don't ask," written in blood on the other side. And when you tip it back to drink from it, on the bottom of it, it says, "Shh."
So it literally looks like you made it on the way
with
here.
With nail polish.
Right? How cool would that have been?
And some wear.
Yeah. But no.
That yeah, it's
yeah. This was seen a few years. My employees got a kick out of it one Halloween.
Wow, very interesting.
That is so good. Yeah, so
That's fresh narwhal.
Wow,
very good.
It's I mean, epic. Of course, it's roasty, big, and chewy, and everything that fall and winter beers should be. It also ages quite nicely, which I'm excited to try the 2014.
Super, super good.
That's incredible, and it's not too boozy. This one.
No, and it's 10.2.
Hmm. Wow.
Wow.
It's a little boozy.
And she brought 5.
You want to actually drive home later.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And some of them are barrel aged. Yeah.
Barrel aged.
It's totally fine.
It'll be good times.
Mm. All right. Well, we're going to drink through a couple more of these variations as we go here.
But, okay, we're going to talk about movies.
We're going to talk about movies while we do that. So we're not giving these to you guys in any specific order. We've all got our top 5 movies that we just have to watch every season. But I know my list, there was no way I could really put these into any, like, number 1, number 2, number 3. So I just kind of jotted them down here. I think maybe I actually do have a number 1, but the other ones were kind of a little more difficult than that for me.
Yeah, for me, impossible to pick.
Well, on that note, you go first.
Oh, shit.
What's your number 5, Lee?
Man, look, there was just no way to pick. There's just too many great classic horror films out there. There just are. It was a super tough. So picking the top 5 was almost a near impossible list or a task. So kind of what I decided to do is to go with ones that sort of evoked horror.
Not mm-hmm. horror films. Horror films.
Oh, wait.
You weren't supposed to pick pornos.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Wait, this isn't
not,
the...
Not WH.
It's German, not just H. It's not that episode.
Porn, yeah. German nope. Dungeon Porn Podcast nope, that we're doing tomorrow.
No, we do pixelated right after, yeah. Cracking.
God damn it.
So but, just wing it, because right, I see your list is for the wrong one, so...
Baby. Look at this mug.
Do your best. Do your best.
True. Without shit. Windows. So, yeah, so it was really all about picking ones that evoke the most emotion and a lot of the childhood memories, because as we were talking in the past, when I used to watch Sinister Cinema and stay up late with my grandma, just a lot of good, you know, memories. So picking the childhood memories that brought me, like, to discovering my love of horror flicks and sci-fi, that was kind of really kind of what I tried to guide myself on. Here, so I've got some very unusual choices, but I think they really embody Halloween and the feel of the holiday for me.
Sure.
My number 5 is going to be Pumpkinhead.
Okay.
Absolutely loved Pumpkinhead. It was on kind of the coattail of something new that you hadn't seen in slasher films or horror films. You had your Jason, your Friday the 13th, but you never saw a really like a creature that became iconic by its design and its look like you did with Pumpkinhead. Mm-hmm. Of course, it had Lance Hendrickson in it, which, you know, Alien fame and Near Dark and...
Oh, God, so yeah, many things.
Keep on going.
Millennium television series for me. Boy, that was...
Yeah.
That was one of my favorites.
And it was at a time when I was also managing a hobby store, so... The model kits and the vinyl kits imported from Horizon Hobbies in Japan were a big thing that I was into. And when the Pumpkinhead model came out, it was just this new iconic creature that was so tangible, you know, a revenge monster, if you will. So number 5 for me, Pumpkinhead. Digging it.
I can agree with that. I really like that one. And I honestly don't think back to that one or remember to watch that one as much as I should. Because every time I hear someone mention it, I go, oh, yeah. Oh, I really like that. But, yeah, it just doesn't find its way into my rotation. So I think this year I might have to change that up.
Yeah, it's, you know, it holds up-ish, you know.
Sure.
But what I love about things like this, again, that does it for me, is the things that change the genre or push the genre or add something new to it. So, you know, this creature really added something new that you hadn't really seen on sort of a monster movie slash horror combination.
Totally. My number five that I have on here, and again, these aren't really in any order, but this one just, I mean, it's so obvious, at least for me, and it seems like for a lot of horror fans nowadays, is 2007's Trick or Treat. Mm. I mean, it's, I'm sure, on so many people's list. It's one of the reasons I just kind of put it on here to get it out of the way right at the get-go. If you haven't seen it, it's an anthology, four stories all set on Halloween evening, with kind of a fifth story arc overlying the whole thing. What I love about it is it just embodies everything about the season in one film. So it has your spooky ghost story. It has your gore. It has all your jack-o'-lanterns and costumes that you could possibly want. It has nods to vampires, nods to werewolves, nods to creepy kids. I mean, it just literally has all the things that I find in so many horror movies stuffed into one package.
What do you call that type of movie?
An anthology.
Oh, yeah. Vocab lesson.
Here's what he's referring to earlier before we started. I said, no. I am writing the word anthology down on this piece of paper because for some reason in normal conversation, every time I try to think of that word, I cannot. I'm like, you know, it's one of those, like a, you know.
So of course I'm dicking where they, out. And...
So it is an okay. anthology. I really, really like this one. Sam, of course, one of the, well, kind of the character of this show, who it's his job. He's kind of the spirit of Halloween, and it's his job to kind of keep everyone on track with the rules of Halloween as far as, you know, you have to wear a costume, you have to give candy, you have to, you know, keep your jack-o'-lanterns lit, all these things that are important to the film and the season, really. He just kind of embodies all that for me now, so he's just a really fun, iconic character.
You know what I would love to do, and I thought about this for a while, is in the Dead Room, which I can't remember if we've really talked about the Dead Room.
Not really.
We're in this room. Aaron has this room that is incredible. It's dedicated to horror, Disney horror, movie horror. It's just, we'll have to post some pictures. Words sure. can't describe it really.
He's an organized hoarder.
But I've always thought how cool it would be because of the Sam character.
Mm-hmm.
He's small. He's buildable. How cool would it be to actually study the movie and build a one-to-one scale replica Sam for your room?
Oh, sure. I don't think it would be too difficult.
That would be pretty amazing.
His little feety pajamas and just around.
Yeah, we'd use the one that
burlap sack head.
Ones that Grace uses.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Hey, don't talk trash about feety pajamas because I have, as an adult, owned two pair
of
feety pajamas. The last pair was, you know, about, gosh, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago, but I found a pair at Macy's. And they had the trap door, double button, butt flap.
Yes.
The whole nine. Didn't zipper in the front. It buttoned up the front. I mean, it was a throwback to feety pajamas. You could go sliding on linoleum in these so well.
You go to the bathroom in the house of the half moon.
So I went and
shine whiskey bottle.
Bought them. But the problem is when you're a kid, you know, you just put stuff on and it fits. When you're an adult, you know. Yeah. People have different torso lengths, leg lengths, all that kind of stuff that comes into play. Well, it turns out the distance between the shoulders and the crotch was not relevant to the distance between the crotch and the floor. So they were tight.
Just riding up
they
the
were
rump?
Super, super tight and very uncomfortable. Yeah. So I
flap I to keep exit ratio distance.
Well, if I like shrugged. You know, I
you
doubled over in pain.
Call?
Yeah, exactly. So they didn't work out.
That's great.
All that is to say, I like feety pajamas, and if I could find a pair that fit, I would totally rock them.
Yeah, well, and we'll post pictures on the podcast, folks.
Yeah, sure.
Or not.
And a video.
We actually want you to continue
and a video
listening.
Of scuffing, because you have to scuff. You got to scuff all around.
See, that
the house
would be
in feety pajamas.
You do those. You dress up as you're a superhero. You throw a towel around, and you're the shocker, right?
Mm. I don't know if that's right or not.
That's what I would do. Wouldn't you want if you were wearing a onesie?
Shocker.
Yeah, you'd go around shocking people. Yes,
oh,
doing the scuffing.
Not where any of our minds went.
Our brains all into this.
Yeah, oh. Not where any of our brains went. And then I was thinking about that Mitch Pileggi movie, and I'm like, did he wear feety pajamas? He was like a prisoner. Okay.
So, you know, you can't see what goes on around here by listening, but...
Which is why we chose to do this format, probably.
I feel it's important to point out that Grace just threw up the one in the pink, one in the stink sign.
Yeah.
For the shocker.
She did.
Once started.
It happened. So anyways, that's my number five. Trick or Treat, 2007. Yeah. I'm sure everyone out there has seen it. If you haven't, oh, good grief. You know, it's usually on Netflix. It's available. Go watch it. It really is a film of the season, for sure.
It does. It out of all the anthologies, I think it's probably the one that nails it.
Sorry, I was sipping the beer.
What's your number five?
Yeah, Grace.
The Strangers.
Oh, love it.
Because I love that movie, and it's creepy, and just has that vibe that I love. It's pretty simple. I mean, it's kind of a home invasion, not pleasant movie, but I think they do an amazing job of using shadows and lighting and sounds and just taking this really quiet, creepy movie and making it just mess with you and resonate with you. And it's one of those movies that the first time I saw it, I was just like, what the shit?
Yeah.
It scared the crap out of me.
One of the most terrifying things isn't a fucking 8 foot tall revenge monster that has a pumpkin on its head. It's fucking real people.
Yeah, it's real people that break into your house and show up
and knock on your door and do terrible things.
And I think that's what I like about that movie is it totally just creeps me out.
Well,
and there's not a lot out there that do anymore.
That film for me stands as one of the few films these days that I can make it scare me. I can turn the lights off. I can open some windows. You know, when it's cold and rainy outside, and I can have that evening by myself where I sit on the couch in the dark and watch that movie, and I'm scared, man. By the end of that thing, you know, I'm turning on hall lights before I walk into the hall.
Right?
So it just has that vibe if you're able to suspend your belief for it. And
I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things that I think a lot of horror movies need is unknowns. Because wasn't, like, Liv Tyler or somebody like that a known actress, one of the lead female
at that point, she had been in a few things.
She'd been in a few, but
still great. Don't get me wrong, but I think that really helps with horror flicks is unknowns actors. That you've not seen before. It doesn't pull you out of it.
Totally, I agree.
Yeah, and it was one of those movies that you didn't care who was playing the characters. It was about the character. Like, you were genuinely like sucked in and concerned for the well being of that person. Like, they do an amazing job of capturing the audience in that movie, and I love that movie, and it totally gets me in that, like, I'm jazzed for horror movies and I want to watch a bunch more. And I've watched it so many times, and it can still, like you said, I mean, I can creep myself out with it, and I have many a time.
Sure, but yeah.
Totally.
I used to manage a video store, and oftentimes
people would come in. He didn't say back in the day.
Not yet.
We're
working on it, man.
Oh. I'm still waiting for this. This episode's first back in the day.
That's going to happen. That'll happen.
Okay.
I just realized how much beer we actually have to drink.
Oh, yeah. P.S. Now we're drinking the 2014.
Bunch of beer coming our way. Yeah.
But I used to do something in the when girls would come in and younger teenager girls and want to watch horror movies. And they say, what movie do you recommend? I say, well, I've got a lot I'd recommend, but you have to watch them in this fashion. First of all, you have to watch them halfway through the movie, right after a scary part. Each one of you has to go into the bathroom, look in the mirror, and turn the light off. Wait a second, and then turn the light back on and see if there's anything behind you. And that would get people creeped out so many times, especially the younger teenagers. And then I'd tell them also, you have to make sure you leave your front door, back door, and all your windows open. Loved it.
Meanwhile, he has all their info in the computer from their rental account.
Yeah.
It's a full service experience, man. Huh.
Yeah. And then he shows up, stares in the window, rattles the doorknob.
I wish.
Oh, I do wish there were things like that. Boy, I'd sign up. Like that Michael Douglas movie, The Game, where you sign up to have terrible things happen. That just always hasn't like enthralled me and been very interesting.
Well, it's kind of like the whole Trapped thing down at Knott's.
Oh, well, yeah. They've got prison rooms. Just escape
lock
from prison
you in a room.
Now.
Figure it out.
We're referring to Knott's Scary Farm, which is a large Halloween event every year, and they had for a couple of years a maze called Trapped that you could pay extra for, and it had a safe word, and they had you do some terrible things.
Juan's over there violently shaking his head.
Yes.
Fuck and the no.
I would say all of us were confronted with a few of our fears during that, and some of them were difficult to get through. So,
well, there was a movie called The Houses That October Built, which was kind of like a handheld camera version of these guys going around looking for the most extreme haunted house, and they found this underground haunted experience. I won't go into the movie or anything, but it was absolutely about that. It was like this, we want to find something where they're going to break all the rules, where these are backwoods, not regulated, and we want to see what happens and what they do. And there's some places out there that are kind of trying to push those limits.
Yeah, I mean, there's the one down in Southern Cal, whatever it is, Manor, Gracie's Manor, something like that, that is pretty terrible and is very famous on YouTube for the things they do to people, and that no one's even made it into the actual event because they have a little pre-scare thing they do to people that's so traumatizing no one makes it past that.
Wow.
But I don't need to go that far, for sure. But are you excited for The Strangers Part 2, Grace?
I don't know. I can't decide if I am.
Okay.
Because sequels for me are either fantastic or they suck balls.
Sure.
I don't want it to suck. I don't want it to ruin what The Strangers is in my brain. Mm. So I'm leery.
Well, I thought that was some of the magic of The Strangers, was that we don't know who these people are. They show up to some people we've just met. They terrorize them for an evening. And again, not giving away the whole film or anything, but we do see them then just leave the next day, and we know nothing about them. We assume this is something they've done before because it was all very calculated and terrible. We also assume this is something they're going to do again, but I was not left with any feeling of like, oh, I hope they make another movie so I could see them do it the next time. Like, this movie was enough for me. So I'm like you, I'm on the fence. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, they left it open at the end. But I feel like that was more of just to mess with you in the ending, because they wanted it to be, I mean, I don't know for sure that they wanted, but I feel like they wanted it to be real.
Yeah.
And you don't always know what happens after, you know, somebody horrible breaks into your house and terrorizes you and whatever else.
Yeah. Well, you got to know that they got away with this one. They're out doing it again somewhere else.
Yeah. So they just leave you with that wondering of, oh, well, shit, where'd they go?
There's another movie that is kind of a takeoff of that. I don't want to say ripoff, but it's like they're wearing like funny animal masks, but they do the same thing.
Oh, You're Next.
Is that what it is?
I haven't seen that yet. I didn't watch that
one. It's pretty good.
That'd be one worth seeing if you like The Strangers.
With Your Next. I enjoyed it. But there's several. I mean, Hush. I thought Hush did what The Strangers did in such a more intimate way. Hush was, I think I'm talking about the right one. It's the lady that's deaf, and she's alone in her home.
Yes.
And a guy shows up to terrorize her. But she can't hear if he breaks a window. She can't hear if he's moving through the house or not. But she does know he's out there. And that same vibe, very claustrophobic. And we're talking a lot about what we talked about a couple episodes ago when we did The Void. It's that siege feeling, that feeling that you're just under attack. And
yeah.
I like those films. I do, for sure.
Yeah, when I'm fucking look out my window at night, it's not to look for, you know, fucking a ghost or a goblin. It's that crazy motherfucker that's to cause me to drop my shit.
For sure.
It should be noted here that while we've been chatting, fucking Grace
has got drunk.
Five of her her season beers that she's
forcing
onto us.
Two different beers.
Well, you keep grabbing for my mug, so I'm not going to turn you down.
Maybe you would finish it.
So we had the 2014 recently. That one I thought was a lot smoother. It was almost... I don't
sweeter.
Want to say creamy, but it definitely had a smoother, silkier mouth.
It's a little more viscous,
mouthfeel. I think I actually liked the flavors and like the pop of flavor that I got off of this year's. The other one was just a little more muted, but it definitely was warmer and softer. And so what is this one?
That's the barrel aged.
This is the barrel aged. So that's
from the same year as the 14. So I think this one was a 14 too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Okay, that's my favorite of the three.
Uh-huh. It's Happy
For
Place.
For sure. That's real, real good. What's our ABV on that one?
12.9.
That's insane. I would never guess that in a million years. This is
It'll
so
give
smooth.
You the warm fuzzies.
We probably shouldn't have led with these.
Yeah, probably. Well, we didn't say bring three versions of every beer.
When you tell a beer nerd to pick her favorite beer.
This is very true. This is why
for
I love
the
you.
Season.
Yeah, we love you.
I don't just pick. And technically, it's only one beer. It's just different.
Well, now
versions.
I feel like I need a break. But that, boy, that.
It's going to be okay.
That barrel aged narwhal is fantastic. So for a break, let's go to Lee. What is your beer of the season?
Well, shit, I still got some of this in here, so I can't.
No, he hasn't even done barrel aged yet.
Chug. I think this is your glass here.
Oh, hey, I've got two glasses.
You do.
Double fist this bitch. Yep.
Juan, do you need 2014?
No.
Yeah, I've had 2014.
2014 for Juan here. That's going to be mine. So this this one goes to Juan.
He's already got that.
And this goes to my pick.
I don't, I haven't had the regular two.
There we go.
Because you haven't even done this yet.
I did. You just poured.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, you did. I swear.
You had this. Okay.
I was the only one that didn't.
So mine, you know, so it's a second pick.
Okay.
Because the first one that is always hands down kind of that Halloween beer for me.
Okay.
Is Hobgoblin by Winchwood.
Oh, yeah.
Which you can get everywhere, every year. It's not a seasonal thing or anything like that.
Mm-mm.
Except this year.
This year was tough.
Weird.
We're going to talk about that probably a couple times tonight, but something's going on with the fall harvest pumpkin slash selection and when it comes out this year, because it's very strange.
I talked to a number of people. Nobody had any answers as to why the Winchwood Brewery... It just was vacant from all of our major bottle shops and big venues.
Yeah.
Couldn't find it. However, not too difficult to find a second love, which came in the form of 10 Barrels. Remember that name?
We do.
Sinister Black Ale.
Oh, I love that beer.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. It has a lot of... Now, I'm going to mispronounce this. I can never pronounce it right. Grace, is it Schwarzbier?
Schwarzbier.
Schwarzbier. Style. It's about 5.7 in ABV. And it is a year-round beer. It comes out of 10 Barrel, which is, you know, Bend, Oregon, is where the three guys got their start. Big 10 Barrel brewery opened up here in Portland. A lot of people excited about that. And of course, you know, Boise, Denver. So it's out there, man. And it's, sure. And they do good stuff. It's got a real wonderful black, dark brown color to it. But without a lot of the traditional astringents and, dark characteristics because of the way they, use their dehusked German black malts. So it gives it, well, the color kind of fools you because it's really actually it's a lighter in body type of beer. It's a lager, but they're using ale yeasts,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know. I might say sessionable, but I think more something that fits more like maybe a black Kolsch.
Oh, okay.
So drink up and remember this one.
So this one's a lot gentler on us. It's what 5.7. So that's.
Yeah, when you really pull these side by side, you're instantly like, oh yeah, no, this is a light, despite the color.
Definitely. I really enjoy this one. I mean, there's a lot of black beers, for lack of a better way of describing them, in the Pacific Northwest, because we're so enthralled with our Cascadian dark ales and our black IPAs. And it's almost an excuse to go even more bitter than we would go with an IPA, because you have a lot more malt presence in them, so you can kind of still offset a ton more bitterness. This one's got that look, and it has that mouthfeel and consistency for me, but definitely holds way back on the bitter and is just super easy drinking.
It's one of those surprise beers I like to throw at people, especially if they're not into dark beers or anything like that, because it has that lighter, again, sort of that Kolschy ale.
Well, and a great name. If you're going to be throwing this around during the Halloween season, that's a fun one to have on the table, you know?
Damn straight. Sinister. Yeah. Sinister. Just so happens that the name happens to match, too.
I like it. Well, we're going to keep drinking on this one while we all talk about our number four pick. Lee, you want to start us out on that one?
Sure. Yeah, this one's near and dear to me, man. Since I was a young little kid.
Young lad.
Back in the day.
Oh,
I dreamed of being a werewolf ever since I saw the Universal Monsters.
Where I thought
werewolf.
This was going to go.
I'm not surprised either.
No, sorry, not even a little bit.
In fact, even to the point where me and a friend of mine, Don Brown, when we were 10 years old, had read werewolf lore and how one of the things that werewolves do is eat raw meat. So we went into the fridge and started chowing on some raw pork.
Oh, no.
Thinking that we were going to...
Raw pork. Out of all the, like, raw meats to werewolf out on, the other white meat.
If you're, I mean, if you're going to do it, you might as well do it. So naturally, when An American Werewolf in London came to screen, it was stunning. It was stellar.
Yeah.
Number four. That was a tough one. I almost flipped it to a higher ranking, but I mean, my God. Was it Rick Baker?
Yeah.
Never saw practical effects like that before.
No, that's I think that's by far and away the best werewolf transformation scene of any werewolf movie.
Won awards.
And it seems like American Werewolf in London and The Howling have this head-to-head, you know, battle of which one is going to be your favorite. Man, The Howling, I can't even watch that all the way through. It's such a terrible movie. Like, I don't even think it's a good film, let alone the best werewolf movie.
I don't
know
that I've even watched The Howling all the way through.
Yeah. I hadn't seen it in a lot of years. So last year I made it a point during my 31 days of, you know, Halloween movie watching thing. I made it a point. I'm going to watch The Howling this time. Barely could.
Yeah, no, it's like saying that Halloween is better than The Happening.
Yeah.
See Aaron's eyes boiling right now.
What?
Speechless. Yeah, no, there's no comparison. Just so happens that two movies came out the same general year that, you know, that were
werewolf movies. But subject matter.
Yeah, I mean, my God. From the Bite on the Moors, you know, to The Recovery, to the nightmares that preceded his actual transformation, his visit of his dead buddy.
Totally. Like zombie werewolf Nazis. I mean,
yeah.
Can't blown away his even family. If it's in a dream state, you can't beat that.
There was a thing that I would do with my hand when I had a long sleeve shirt. Remember that scene where he falls to the ground and his knuckles start stretching out and his arm starts elongating? I was actually able to like mimic that a little bit by having a long sleeve shirt, and then I would tore out my hands and then like stretch my arm out while the sleeve remained still. And for like almost a split second, it looked like that, and everybody's like, "Woo!" That was kind of my thing. And then I'd also peel my lips back. And his buddy
grow out of your
I was doing his buddy I can't remember his buddy's name now.
Oh, I don't know.
The one that came back as a zombie. And I'd peel my lips back over my teeth and dry him out, and I'd be like, "Get serious, David." So as you can tell, I totally geeked out over that movie a lot.
That's awesome. I mean, that's how you know it's one of these.
Yeah, and the motherfucker dies at the end. So it's not a happy story, man.
No, which there's far too many of those. We don't need any more. I mean, if you want to darken an ending up now and then, I think that's a great thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad they only made one version of that movie.
That's not true.
No, it is.
Okay, I see.
Hush your whore mouth. It is true.
Oh, just wait for the remake.
Oh, so by the way, John Landis's son is going to be doing the remake. Mm. And John Landis himself said, "No, it's not a good idea. Don't do it. Nobody wants to see it."
Good for him.
Yeah.
And no, we don't.
Yep, it's true.
Don't need to. My next pick is 1977's Suspiria.
Oh, I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to see that on the big screen, the new print that's touring the United States right now. We're going to go check that out in a... Boy, I don't know. That's a little while till we get to see. I think about a month and a half till it comes through here.
December or something?
Yeah, it's already moving all over the country, but it's got a lot of stops. So I think it's early December for us. But Suspiria was probably growing up. I think it was the very first horror film that I watched that was from another country, you know, another culture, another style of filmmaking and storytelling entirely that felt like it. Like it took me away from the horror films that I was watching. It took me away from everything I was getting off of a Hollywood video, you know, shelf when I first walked in and grabbed Suspiria. The colors, you know, that Argento uses are so outside of other horror films, which try to be dark and bleak, and he was bright and striking and stunning. And while so many of the horror films that I were watching were trying to be gritty and edgy and kind of dirty and gross, he was showing this like fantastical fairy tale on the screen, which also was extremely bloody and violent, but in a such an artistic way. And more than anything, it's just how stylistic it all is. I mean, his eye for storytelling on Argento, of course, his eye for storytelling on his films is so uniquely his. He's one of those directors that has those trademarks, those calling cards. There's a lot of directors that, you know, if you're watching a Hong Kong action flick, you know a John Woo movie. If you're watching a John Woo, you know a John Carpenter movie if you're watching a John Carpenter movie. And Argento was one of those directors for me. His use of color, his use of glass as such an uncomfortable instrument in every way. Suspiria for me definitely is one that I have to watch every year just to bring back up that magic and that different view of things that were really scary.
Yeah, you've got me. So have you seen it, Grace?
I don't think I have.
Are you going?
I bought us all tickets.
Oh, that's right, you did.
Yeah, I bought 4 tickets for the 4 people at this table.
That's right. I guess you're in.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be cool. Because that might be the weekend that I'm getting a free trip to Vegas.
Oh, that's true. Many times.
But we'll see.
Yeah, Juan and I think we watch it every year together, yeah.
It's a classic.
I actually watched it about 5 hours ago.
Why don't you get in here and talk about it real quick while I pee?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm drinking.
He's got his priorities straight.
Yeah, that's right.
I was going to say, though, Argento, people say he directs violence, but in a very beautiful way, like an artistic way.
It is.
Like, it's like just, it's not just right in your face gory. The way he does it is just, with, like you said, the colors, you know, just, it's done very masterful. Well, back totally. In the day.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he's lost a few strokes.
Lost his thing. Yeah,
a little dated
along the way. Yeah, he's had some dregs, but yeah, I think that's true.
When you were
yeah.
describing it and you were saying it was very fairy tale and colorful, I was thinking like Labyrinth.
Not so fantasy. It's the first in his witch trilogy, so we're talking about witches and things, but just the movement of the camera, the way he directs it, the colors that impart different emotions. But more than all of that, I think the real resonation with me, and this also speaks to something that we're going to do later this year, is the soundtrack, the music by the Italian prog rock band Goblin, who we finally got to see for our first time ever last year here in the States. And got autographs and had a meet and greet before the show and all that kind of stuff. And we're going to see them again this year when they come through. But films back in those days, and especially foreign language films, very rarely recorded all of their audio at that time. They did overdubs later and came back and put in all the dialogue. For this film, Argento was forced to do that for dialogue because a lot of his actors spoke different languages. And so they were sometimes delivering lines in their own languages, and other people just knew when to react. They didn't understand what was being said.
Wow.
But also, he was so enthralled with Goblin's music, and the music for this film actually existed before the film did, that he played the music at full volume, cranked on the set, and let people act to what was going to eventually be the soundtrack. And then later went in and put the voices on top of it.
The soundtrack is perfect for the movie. It's absolutely perfect.
Yeah, and I think that's because the movie was made almost for the soundtrack. So
I can't wait.
It's like a music video.
Like Carpenter's Halloween.
Sure.
That soundtrack he did for the original Halloween.
Definitely.
I can't imagine anything else other than that being there. But simplistic masterful. On the same level. The soundtrack for Suspiria is, I couldn't imagine anything else.
All right.
For that movie.
This better not suck, guys.
It will not suck. Grace, what's your next pick?
Jeepers Creepers.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Exciting.
Love me some Jeepers Controversial. Creepers.
Yeah. True. I was. I don't want to rain on your parade.
No, that's right. That's
I loved it say. Up till kind of the sort of the reveal.
Just don't give away the end.
Oh, that's I like all. The whole movie. I love the movie. I think it's a great movie. I really enjoy it.
I love Jeepers Creepers because for me, it's reminiscent of like old school monster flicks, but done with like that slasher twist and feel. Like, you have this monster that's going after, you know, these stupid high schooler, teenager, whatever. And there's the chase and there's all that, you know, tension and everything. But there's also the mystery of, you know, what is this monster? What is it, you know, is it a person? Is it a creature? What is it? You know, why is he after them? And there's all these kind of underlying things. And I love it because it's like that. It's not just your typical, here's another slasher movie.
Yeah, because doesn't it put like a lot of questions right at the beginning? Because then there's this big truck that it drives around in and collects bodies. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're like, why is it?
Beating
and then dumps it down a hole or something.
Beating you. I love that truck. It's perfect.
It is. And I remember writing a review for this long ago when they first sent me the DVD for the website I was writing reviews for at the time. And the thing that blew me away about this movie was the dialogue between the two main characters, the brother and the sister, is so authentically young brother and sister. Like the way they rib on each other.
They're just fighting the whole time and just name calling and bullshit. And
then at the same flip side, the second one of them is any kind of danger, the sheer, you know, panic they feel and the care and concern and all. It sold itself as so genuine. To me, yeah, then.
For sure.
Well, yeah, again, really it goes back to, I remember it being something new. It's like, okay, this is something that, you know, could be an iconic, mm-hmm. a new Freddy, a new, you know, Jason, a new Pumpkinhead.
Sure.
Which then did spawn, you know,
and I think other in a movies. Way that worked because, I mean, Tom McFarlane's toys, you know, they've put out a Candyman and a Jason and a Freddy and a Michael Myers and they've put out a Creeper.
Oh, yeah.
So he did kind of become an iconic character even through just a couple films.
God, it's been years since I've seen that. Didn't they have didn't it have like a cave of collection, like a collection of bodies?
Yeah.
And it was like,
it's his little masterpiece.
Was it building it was like building sewing them together or something?
It had built kind of a Sistine Chapel of its like victims and like kind of coated them in a substance.
It's like if Buffalo Bill made a tent.
And,
exactly like that.
Well, and that's the thing.
It was a tent in a cave.
It borrowed from a lot of things. It borrowed from that, you know, the Duel or the car, you know, that terror of being chased down a roadway, you know, something that you can't understand why it's attacking you. And then it borrowed a lot from, just like Grace said, monster flicks. And it borrowed from that Texas Chainsaw kind of, you know, storing these bodies in the backwoods kind of thing.
Shit happening.
Yeah, well, and even the character design, you know, with its big duster coat and that mm-hmm. huge hat it wears and all that kind of stuff. It was kind of just dirty cowboy.
Yeah. You don't know if he's just a hillbilly or if he's a monster.
Right. Which, and not to say when I said I didn't like the reveal, it doesn't mean that I didn't like the design of the creature. I just said, I wish that we didn't have to have a reveal. I mean, I'm like, what the fuck was that? It's like, you know, we don't need to know what Boba Fett's backstory is. We just need 30 seconds of Boba Fett and we're good forever.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
Shut the hell up.
And the big switcheroo at the end of that movie was very impressive to me also, where, and I'd have to watch it again to remember the actual intricacies, but I remember just feeling it's going to get the girl, it's gonna get the sister, and I think they sold that really well. And the boy kept saying like, I'm not gonna let it get you, and I'm not gonna let it do this, I'm not gonna, and then we find out it's been going after that boy the whole time, and there's that victim switcheroo right at the end, and I remember thinking that was really impressive.
Wasn't there also the Jeepers Creepers song, the jingle?
Jeepers Creepers, where'd you get those peepers?
And
they made it super creepy in that movie.
Yeah, because every time that music came on, it sort of like predicted that the whatever it was going to.
Yeah, there was a seer or kind of a clairvoyant, I guess, that they ran into or that contacted them and said, you know, I hear that song when there's bad things for you. And so it was a running part of that film, which is funny because that song was a romantic sweetheart song, you know, back when it was written in, I don't even know, the 40s, maybe 30s. Yeah. I don't know how old that song is, but.
And they made it super
Yeah, it
creepy.
Was kind of a song you'd play for the one you were wooing. And they turned
now
it
we
into
hear
it,
we're
the
like,
theme for that.
My grandma obviously knew that song, and we made her watch that movie one day. And so after she watched that movie, she would complain all the time. She goes, "You ruined my song that I knew from my childhood. Every time I hear that song, I think of that creeper." She goes, "All that time,
see,
that guy chased
perfect.
The thing." And I'm
excellent.
Like, "Really?" She goes, "Like, oh, but did you like the movie?" She's like, "It was interesting."
Yeah.
She goes, "All right."
That's
she goes,
mastery.
It is.
I mean, John Carpenter did that with Mr. Sandman. You know, that only played through the credits of Halloween. But now I hear that song and I'm like, oh, it's Halloween.
Or Back to the Future.
True. All right, well, I guess it's time for my beer of the season.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I really needed that 10 barrel to, that dark ale to really wash down that barrel age.
Boy, that was a rough get-go.
Do you need like a juice bottle?
That was a rough start. So my beer of the season is a beer I used to sell, actually, when I was selling beer a few years back. And I always made sure it was on my shelf just so I could buy it and have it and bring it home. And it's from Lompoc, which is a brewery right here in Portland. And it is their Monster Mash Imperial Porter.
Oh.
And it's just been one of my favorite seasonal beers, not only because the fun name, again, the Monster Mash and the skull on the label and all those things that make it fun to have at a Halloween party or to bring over to a friend's house, but it's such an interesting take on a porter in the sense that it's a little more chocolatey than a lot of porters, which tend to have that kind of espresso or coffee lean.
Oh, that's good.
And it's also almost a little roushy. It's almost a little smoked. And I really enjoy those two notes on this beer. Dark chocolate
on the palate. It's also thin to me. Sometimes a porter is very thin, like some of them, but this one's not.
Definitely. A little more volume. I think some of that's from that imperial nature.
Exactly.
It's not terrible. It's 8.1%, so it's not too strong. But you get kind of a dark chocolate or baker's chocolate vibe in there. It's got all my favorite hops in it, so I know I'm pulling some of those profiles out, but Centennial Cascade, Willamette. It's awesome. I don't get a chance to explore Lompoc beers as much as I would like to. I'm always on top of the Pamplemousse when it comes out, and this one, but I really feel like I have to get back into their beers a little bit deeper because...
Did you say this was an Imperial Porter?
It is.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Very, very, very flavorful. Ton of malts is one thing I remember from talking to them one year when we were actually drinking this, I think over at the Fifth Quadrant, is I think they use at least half a dozen, if not more, specialty malts.
Wow.
So it just has so much character, a lot of character to it.
Well.
But yeah, when I see this one hit the shelves, I am excited. I'm thrilled, and I know Halloween's here. I start thinking about Halloween parties, Halloween entertaining, you know, getting together for movies and all that kind of thing. So it really sells the season for me. And then it's a super good beer that I can't get the rest of the year. So there's excitement in that too.
You know what? And Monster Mash reminds me of like, okay, so first of all, obviously the Monster Mash, the song, and all of the different monsters making their appearance, you know, in a grand dance or party. It reminded me of the Halloween party that you had a few years back where we took either characters or was it directors from horror movies and we pinned them on the back of people's shirts.
Oh, yeah.
And then yes. Everybody yeah. had to guess who they were pinned on the back of their shirt, who
that
they were.
That was a lot of fun.
But yeah, that we should definitely do something like that again.
And I can't believe I couldn't guess mine. It's funny. I don't remember a single other person's, but I remember mine because I was in shame that I couldn't. Guess what? I think I was really Tim Burton.
Yeah. And yeah, you were like one of the last men standing, right?
Obvious. Yeah, yeah. I had no idea what was happening.
I always think of Aaron's monster cereals that he mixes together in his damn dog bowl.
Oh, how did that not even mash. Think to come
that's
up?
I
yes,
think.
I...
That's what I think.
Yeah. I go to the Target and I buy the monster cereals. So I buy my Count Chocula and my Boo Berry and those. And I mix them all together.
In what?
Like, well... First in like a gallon Ziploc and I get them all shooken up so that it's a nice mix. And I call this mix my Monster Mash, but I'm a little bit of an oinker. So I don't eat cereal out of a normal size bowl. We purchased long ago a giant dog bowl that must be for like a Great Dane or something. This thing is so huge. I think I got it at IKEA or somewhere. It's just a massive dog bowl. And that's what I eat my Monster Mash out of.
I do not understand how you keep your Adonis figure. Eating like that.
It's a trade secret. I can't let him.
Well, damn it.
That's why he can fit
release
so well
a video.
That's why he can fit so well into his footy pajamas.
But yeah, the the Frankenberry and the and all those, the Boo Berry. And when they actually re-released the Fruit Brute a couple years back, I was so excited because I could finally make the complete Monster Mash.
That was when I was working at Target.
People think it's kind of gross because one of them is strawberry flavored and one's blueberry flavored, and Fruit Brute was, I think, That was the strawberry, and then blueberry is like blueberry. And
all the fruit ones were blueberry. Fine. It was then when you throw chocolate,
and people are like, "That's kind of weird."
Chocolate, it's the greatest.
No,
fruit
I
ever.
Like. Don't even go there. I love chocolate. I just don't like chocolate mixed with all the fruit shit.
It goes great. Ever had a chocolate covered strawberry?
Ooh,
that's different.
Nah, it's
not at all. It's exactly the same.
No, because strawberry cereal doesn't taste like an actual freaking strawberry.
It tastes better.
I'm gonna not even say it words right bad. Now.
I'm siding with him on this one.
So that's my beer of the season. Well done. Yes, Monster this is Mash. Great. And make a Monster Mash this year, everybody. Go out. Go to Target.
Combine will it. Will you publish? Post your recipe.
It's a 1-to-1 ratio. And as little milk as possible, because I do not like milk. The only time I will ever put milk in my face is when I'm eating Monster Mash, because that's the only cereal I eat all year long.
He's got a video on Facebook from Delish.
Yeah, that's right. All right, let's get into our next movie. This is going to be our number 3 pick from each of us of movies we have to watch. Grace, you want to take the start on this one?
Sure. So this one for me is kind of, it's almost a series. So I did Evil Dead, but
I applaud you, madam.
I fucking love those movies. And Aaron even asked me earlier, he's like, one or two? Serious one or the hilarious one? Or the remake? And then there's, just...
Ash versus the Evil Dead.
Ash. And I can't have Halloween without Ash. I usually start with Evil Dead, and then I end up watching all of them because... Why wouldn't you?
Sure.
But I think Evil Dead's just one of those movies that it's everything that the Halloween season is. It's creepy. It's jacked up. It's, and some of them, there's some serious comedy.
Yeah.
Whether they're trying to be funny or not. Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
Shenanigans. But it's just one of those movies for me that will always be Halloween. And it's one of my favorite horror series. Partly because it's serious and creepy, but it's also just ridiculous. So it's kind of that happy medium. But sure. Yeah, so Evil Dead had to be on my list.
No, I'm right there with you. It resonated with me too. I mean, again, it goes to like some of the iconic things that are adding to the genre. Book of the Dead, the Necronomica, the Deadites.
Yeah. You
know, these now are staples or their household names.
Sure. Everybody. I mean, it's a damn television series.
You reach
now.
For your Betty Crocker cookbook right next to your Necronomica. It's
and your boomstick.
And your boomstick.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah, I love it. And of course, Sam Raimi,
mm-hmm.
and Bruce Campbell and their brother Ted and Robert Talbert all got mm-hmm. together as, young people saying, fuck, man, we need to make a horror flick. And they started off just making a real short. I can't remember. It was like Evil in the Woods or Something in the Woods, I think, is what their like little short movie that they made first was. Mm-hmm. And then like, well, shit, we should really make this into a movie. And man, back before GoFunding and Angel Funds and all that other shit, they were out there putting up posters and talking to people and doing all the hard work, trying to generate, just a small amount of money to get the movie off the
totally.
And I think it was like Stephen King, maybe not the first one, but maybe into the second one that actually said, he loved the first one so much that he called in some favors from other producers and said, look, you need to back this.
Oh, nice.
So
I wonder if he got what he expected out of the second one.
I don't know. But I mean, that's just, that's like, the four of us schmucks saying, let's work really hard.
You lost me.
Well, I remember when I was a kid in school, you're like in elementary school, whatever, and you hear about certain movies when you're a kid that, you're not supposed to watch, but you watch them. That and so original Evil Dead and A Nightmare on Elm Street. Those are the ones we'd all talk about, like, oh, we watched this. We got a copy of it. Or our parents rented it or whatever that. And
that
we watched
is true,
it.
Yeah.
Those two movies were the ones that always...
It was the forbidden
fruit.
The ones that
we all... Like, somebody would watch it. Then we'd have to go find a way to get it and watch it and stuff like that. And
somebody
those two
wants
movies.
Their kids watching Rapey Trees.
True. Well, and I think a lot of that is just...
Hold on. As a young adolescent, I didn't mind it so much.
Well, the... Your parents didn't want you watching it, idiot.
You're right. Yes.
Also,
sheesh.
It has a lot to do with
poor mother.
The way you name things, too. Yeah. You know, you name a movie Poltergeist and you put a little girl in the front. Well, exactly. Mom knows what a poltergeist is at this time. Yeah, you call it Evil Dead, and they're like, there's nothing good about that. That's just terrible.
That's double bad.
And this was right in that kind of manic panic stage of, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, and people literally thought there were satanic killings happening all the time, and talk show hosts were doing shows about the satanic epidemic in the United States, and people were coming forward and saying that, like, oh yeah, you know, this family down the street's been having babies and sacrificing them, you know, all of which, none of it happened at all. It was just all sensationalized.
Karen might have eaten a baby.
Maybe. So yeah, I mean, when you've got a movie out and it's called Evil Dead, and that's everything people know about it, it was harder to sell to your parents.
Is that how you got your Monster Mash through your mom? Like, no, mom, this isn't covered chocolate frosted sugar bombs. It's called Monster Mash.
No, I didn't start.
No, he started that as a grown ass man.
Yeah, I started Monster Mash like maybe 5 years ago. So.
Oh, yeah. Fucking brilliant.
Yeah, I love being 12. I couldn't have those at this age. Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't get to do it when I was 12, so making up for lost time.
Oh, shit. So Grace is opening up another one of her first beers. Are you? Okay. All right. I thought you were
again rotating through. We're still talking on the next beer. I'm
premature.
So my number three movie that I have to watch is also a dead movie. It is Return of the Living Dead.
Oh.
1985. And Return of the Living Dead for me is a lot of the things that you were just saying about Evil Dead. It was that mix of some scary, gross stuff and just being super funny and totally absurd. It took a new spin on zombies. We had not seen zombies that talked, you know, before. We had not seen zombies that could survive a pickaxe through the head.
Right.
We had not seen zombies that could survive being cut in half, things like that. So it was a whole new spin on zombies. It brought to popular culture what we now think is just a zombie thing, which is brains.
Yep.
That didn't exist. Zombies, prior to that, yeah, they ate some flesh. They ate people sometimes. Sometimes they just killed people. It all depends on how far back you want to go. But their desire to munch your brains started right there in Return of the Living Dead. Such iconic scenes in this film. Tar Man.
Fucking brilliant. The best. Yeah. The best, hands down.
And iconic screen queens. I mean, you got
Leanna Quigley. Yep. And the paramedics, Send More Paramedics. People have t-shirts of Send More Paramedics. You see someone wearing that, you're immediately excited. You're like, oh my God, it's Return of the Living. It's all those things. And then, yeah, it was life altering seeing Leanna Quigley for the first time showing up in some of these 80s horror movies and really understanding what a scream queen could be outside of Jamie Lee Curtis's version, outside of that kind of innocent, wholesome. I mean, even Heather Langenkamp in Nightmare, a very good girl, a very pristine and proper girl that was just thrust into a bad situation. And all of a sudden, we were going to now glamorize a scream queen who just gets naked in every film, is hypersexualized, and just there.
Yeah, you go from Langenkamp and Curtis to Brink Stevens and Linnea Quigley. You know, they're, you know, complete opposites, in my opinion. You know, just
such cheesy.
Which is what drove it into the minds, you know, is that application. I love it in that sense because that was kind of my high school years. So when I saw all these different groups of people together, you had your punk rocker, you had your rapper / breakdancer kind of guy, you had your nerd, you had your new wave, you had your preppy. And, you know, they were all hanging, and that was very much my crew. In the, you know, my junior, senior year in high school.
Sure. And partying down in a cemetery, you know, which still to this day seems odd to most people. And to me, I'm like, there.
Done that many a time. I had a few Bartles and James wine coolers at the Mount Scott
is that when they invented funeral the
up there. No. They've That's been right. God damn it, wine. Fucking excellent pick. Excellent,
very
choice.
Good film. I have to watch it every season. It's honestly, it's probably usually the first one I watch because it just kind of it gets me into that fun vibe and just like, oh yeah, because I like Halloween because Halloween is scary and it's spooky and it's dark and it's full of, you know, monster makeups on people, and it's got haunted houses and all of these frights, and the days are short, so it's dark a lot. I like that. But I also still like that whimsical, the Casper the Friendly Ghost costume. Like, I like the young side of it and that kind of loose side of it, and this film gets me in the mood for both of those things.
Yeah, well, and like you said, it did. It took the zombie genre to a different level when the freaking pickaxe goes through that cadaver and he doesn't stop.
Yeah,
in fact, he gets more violent. You're like, oh fuck, now what?
Well, when a
how do we fight these things now?
When a literal half a dog comes to life comes and they pound on it with a crutch to where it's like whimpering and yelping, which I don't understand because it's half a dog. And it still won't die, and it's still animated. You were like, "Oh, this is a different kind of thing."
Yeah,
here. Yes. So I love it. I realized that, you know, Romero made his Night of the Living Deads and those headed down the Dawn Day, and you know, one of his compatriots on that took this series and said, "I'm doing my own sequel. I'm going to take it my own way." And I got to tell you, I like this path a lot more.
Yeah,
and I mean, that carries through 2, which I love, and 3, which I also love. So I just think that the Return of the Living Dead series did a lot for me, or a lot more for me personally, than Romero's Dead series did. Yeah. Although Dawn,
I think it brought a good mix of comedy and horror. You know, it was a good mix.
And also it held back on social commentary, which if you listen to this show long enough, you'll realize I don't want in my horror.
Well, that's what Romero was able to do. He's like, look, man, I'm going to take zombies and I'm going to introduce them in this way, which was much different than what anybody had heard prior to that point. Back in, late 40s, there was Bela Lugosi's The White Zombie, which was a hoodoo or a voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they told zombie stories.
Sure.
Was that.
That Haitian beginning to it all.
And then Romero said, hey, here's a thought. And so, man, it did its thing. And it had a social commentary. And it had its road. Mm-hmm. And then his partner comes in the 80s and says, I'm going to do this now, too. And it turned it on its head, and it was fantastic because it now gave us a broader range of this zombie genre that then, of course, just grew and grew and grew and grew. So in my opinion, you know, room in the world for both, because they both have just created and carried on their own special elements to the – Grace has got a shenanigans going on over there.
It's okay.
Grace is like, you're done talking about that movie. I want to talk about my
fucking
beer.
I haven't even talked about my movie yet.
No.
I'm just jumping the gun and drinking.
All right, fine. Yeah. Sorry. Love zombies. Love zombie movies.
We know.
Oh, yeah. So, and then he the fast zombies. Oh my God. He don't even get zombies. Me started on the fast zombies.
That's why he's here at this table.
What if a vampire, an undead creature, bit a zombie? Or vice versa?
Oh, shit. Are we getting into hypotheticals?
It'd be gross. It's not going to get any blood.
That's true.
Yeah, there's no life left. Well, I mean, and then you're looking, are we talking about infection-based zombies? Are we talking about chemical imbalances in the brain-based zombies? Are
we what kind of vampire are we talking about?
We can't talk infection-based or viral-based or anything like that, because the vampire nature is traditionally is a mystical thing. So the zombie bite.
We're talking like he would be immune to vampires, or are you talking like sparkles?
Viruses. A vampire would be.
Yeah, the first sparkly zombie and I'm out. Yeah, so
sparkly brains.
Brains are pretty.
All right, Lee, what's your next one?
All right. Let me take you back.
Oh, geez.
To 1963.
Okay.
Vincent Price.
Excellent.
Yes, the king of horror, the prince.
The only one of us that was alive during this.
I wasn't even alive then.
You were.
Nice try.
So he says.
The Raven.
Mm.
Now, if you have not seen it, it is such a joy. It's an American independent B-rated movie, horror comedy film that was produced by Roger Corman.
Mm.
Now, I don't know if that name sounds familiar to anybody.
Oh, it better.
But
oh,
it yeah. better. You know, Roger Corman, he... Good Lord, he is has so many film credits. He's responsible for a whole slew, like eight in a series of Poe-esque stories, which The Raven is one of them, Pit and the Pendulum, House of Usher, things like that. But he's also done some B-rated movies like Last Woman on Earth, The Wasp Women, Creature from the Haunted Sea. But he's also done good, amazing things like The Magic Voyage of Sinbad, for instance, which another amazing one. And he's been responsible for so many either launched careers or influence in careers. In The Raven, for instance, the son of one of the wizards is a young Jack Nicholas.
Huh.
Yeah, he's Warren the... Nicholson. Is it? Oh, sorry, yeah, Nicholson. Nicholson. Not the golfer. Yeah. Not the golfer, Jack Nicholson. He also gave William Shatner his first leading role.
Wow.
Yeah.
And thus, Michael Myers' face.
And thus, yes. Michael Myers' face. So you see, it's all tied in. It's all one amazing thing.
We've come full
circle. He had an assistant by the name of Francis Ford Coppola.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Hmm. And he gave Francis Ford Coppola his very first director debut.
Wow.
And he, I mean, he's done things with Ricky, Mickey Rooney, Peter Fonda, Nancy Sinatra, Dennis Hopper, Bruce Dern, and even a young Robert De Niro. So two parts, The Raven, got to see it, but also visit Roger Corman's bio and check out some of his stuff. This guy is a foundation. But The Raven is just an amazing film from my childhood. It was the first time that I sort of saw this haunted, wizard kind of film where it's set during the 15th century. It has a couple of sorcerers, Vincent Price and Boris Karloff, that are end up being nemesis. And Vincent Price is mourning his wife, Lenora, who died 2 years past. And of course, that ties into the poem of The Raven and Lenora and all that stuff. And a raven raps on his door one day, and it turns out to be a wizard that was transformed by Boris Karloff. And he comes to Vincent Price and says, "Hey, turn me back into a raven or into a human. I've got some news for you." And he says, "Hey, by the way, your wife Lenora is still alive, and she's hoeing over at Boris Karloff's place." So they head over there, and a mighty duel ensues, and it's, you don't have CG back then. So you have these really cool, like, color blocks that they put. Vincent Price creates a bunch of knives to fly at Boris Karloff, and he waves his hand in front of him, and this blue sort of plate appears, and the knives stick in it. And it's just so, like, cheesy, but just absolute childhood gold. So I would say people with kids even introduce them to some of this older stuff.
For sure.
It will really, I think, concrete in some really good, fun interest.
Nice. I actually have a picture painted by a pretty talented guy named Rob Birchfeld. Hopefully we'll be doing an interview with him actually pretty soon. You can find him on Facebook, actually, at a website called The Horror Movie Art of Rob Birchfeld. And I've been buying his prints now for quite some time. Well, basically since the day I discovered him, it's when I bought my first prints from him. And
it's incredible stuff.
An amazing artist. But yeah, the one right over there on the wall is Vincent Price from The Raven, with The Raven on his shoulder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I honestly have not.
Man.
I never have.
Either. Not either.
Now, granted, it's one of those things
where sold. I kind of want to check it out.
Childhood magic goes a long way.
Sure.
But as adults, still, it's, you can see what they're doing and where it's coming from and how it really built what we're seeing now. Or an experiencing now.
I'm going to put that on my short list. I want to see that for sure. So Grace has been cradling her first of our favorite pumpkin beers. So why don't you go ahead and start our pumpkin beer talk. What do you have over there?
So as usual, I didn't just pick a normal pumpkin beer off the shelf.
Nothing.
I dug through my various piles of beer hoarding and grabbed a Cascade Brewing pumpkin smash from 2014, because I figured we already had the narwhal from 2014. Let's just keep it rolling. 2014 was a good year. It's actually when Babadook and It Follows came out. So
look at that.
Fun year for horror. Get me, I googled. Nice. but, so this is basically a Northwest style sour ale, aged in bourbon and brandy barrels with pumpkin and spices.
Wow. Awesome. You don't do anything small, do you?
No.
Well, and neither does Cascade.
Also, this one's only 11.1%, so it'll be fine.
Yeah, it's no problem.
I'm just apparently going to try to
kill the guys Cascade, today. I mean, some would say arguably. I do not say arguably. I think Cascade owns sours in the Pacific Northwest. And yeah. There's some people that
are
hot on their heels, and there's some people doing sours in some amazing ways, for sure. I mean, Degard and some Witness folks, but
do I have to?
But honestly, I think Cascade is my house of sours to go to in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, fuck. I thought you poured me a whole glass knowing how much I love sours. It. Yeah, thank you.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, no, I love Cascade because sours are their thing. They know what they're doing. They play with different barrels. They do everything from fruit sours to just funky, weird stuff to pumpkin and spice. So I thought it was, you know, why not? Fall for me, fall and Halloween and all that is about sharing cool beers. And, you know, I mean, that's part of the reason I keep all these beers and I have these verticals and all these random hordes of old beers. Because I want to get together on a rainy night and crack them with friends and watch a horror movie.
For sure. This is super delicious.
Right? No, actually, this is pretty good.
Says the guy who hates pumpkin beers.
Exactly.
How's it going over there, sour hater?
What does Lee think?
Oh, God.
Okay. Not being our resident sour fan.
He's wishing he had a palate jack right now is what he's
I was just about to say earlier before this got poured was like how nice it is to be able to do a podcast that doesn't have an IPA in it.
Oh, yeah.
And then the sour beer got poured. Mm-hmm. Now, listen to me. I'm trying to broaden my horizons because I absolutely love the arts and the science in brewing. Mm-hmm. But back in the day when something like this came out, it was a contaminated beer. We poured the fucker down the drain.
Yeah.
And these sour beers now that are out and popular,
because they're soured on purpose.
I don't get it. They're still wild, crazy-ass yeast. You can't cross-contaminate. You got to have special rooms.
That's right.
That's because the shit is tainted
and delicious.
This particular one is a pumpkin smash is a blend of select quad ales aged in bourbon and brandy barrels for up to 22 months with pumpkin and spices, and it was released in 2014.
Wow.
So it's an old booger.
Well, look, and I don't want to be that old codger that, you know,
too late.
But you are
young kids and you're moving pictures,
but the elder statesman of this crew.
There are just certain things I've got opinions about because back in the day.
You don't have to like every beer. I'm going to have plenty of these. I mean, eventually we're going to be doing some Belgian-y farmhouse, whatever.
I might like all of the beers.
I'm going to be going, what's this clove banana crap shit? Like that's not
all
my
beers
vibe.
Matter, Aaron.
But I love the fact that they have taken what normally would be a tainted, infected beer.
Yeah.
And turned it into a craft.
Sure. It's like penicillin. You know, they took mold
off
of cheese and now it saves lives.
All right. So you might have won me over a little bit.
Yeah.
This could save your life.
This is an important revolution.
This could save your life.
That we're doing right here. So
penicillin.
Mm. All right. So that is Grace's pick for
I appreciate you, Grace. Thank you for bringing
the pumpkin beer of the season.
I really do.
I'm going to jump into my number two movie of the season, and again, I feel like I'm playing it safe here, same like when I did Trick or Treat or whatever, but it's true, it's honest, it's my favorite horror film, always will be, never's going to change. It's 1978, it's John Carpenter's Halloween.
Hell yeah.
That's fair.
Only reason I put it at number two is because we're not talking about our four favorite horror movies of all time, we're talking about the movies of Halloween season, and you would think that would still push it to one, but it's... it's the masterpiece. It's the original. It's the one that started it. It's set on Halloween night. It's named Halloween, for Christ's sake. It's the scares hold up to this day. The atmosphere holds up and feels familiar. It didn't use dated locations. It didn't use characters that behaved in dated ways. I mean, sure, some of the slang is different, but the way the characters performed and were written is timeless. The acting holds up, and the season always feels the same, even though it was, of course, not shot in the fall, and we know that the leaves were dumped out of bags and raked up after every shot and all those fun things. But the season that it's set in is, it's what we feel every time. It's those windy evenings, it's little kids running up and down the streets, and it's all of those things. It's so groundbreaking. I mean,
it shows you how good it was, that it wasn't any of that, but they made it look like that.
Sure.
And feel that way.
It was such a low budget to create such an impact. I mean, it's just, it had to be on my list.
So take note.
It is my favorite horror movie.
You don't need to go overboard.
And so there it is. That's my number two movie.
And more importantly than anything, it brought us Jamie Lee Curtis.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's very true.
She's gone on to be quite the icon.
Do not forget about PJ Souls, though. PJ Souls.
What?
Totally.
Totally.
Oh, God.
Seen the thing you like?
PJ Souls, yeah.
Apparently, I have to revisit Halloween.
Yeah, you have not watched it as
much. Juan and I got to go down to the Halloween Returns to Haddonfield. I think it was, what, 20th or 25th anniversary when they did the first one? 25th?
Yep.
And we went down, and it was held in Pasadena, where Halloween was filmed. And, boy, that was a hoot. We got to meet some of the Michael Myers characters. Dick Warlock was there, all those sorts of things. The Ladies of Evil Dead were down there. Yeah. It was a Last House on the Left cast reunion, which was kind of amazing. Yeah. Ken Foree.
Did Donald Pleasant show up and try to save your souls?
No, he unfortunately did not.
That explains a lot.
And we missed Carpenter, I think.
Yeah, we didn't get Carpenter. I think
Carpenter's got a hell of a notch on his belt, doesn't he?
He certainly does.
Good.
Yeah, he certainly does.
We're going to go see one of our all-time favorite Carpenter movies here next week.
Yes, we are. So that's my number two.
Grace?
Oh, me now?
Sure.
Mine's a repeat because it was already on Aaron's list, but mine's Trick or Treat.
Mm. Ooh.
Yeah.
What's your spin?
I love Sam so much. He is a maniacal little shit of a villain. And I love everything about him. He's this, basically he just embodies this jacked up little kid in a Halloween costume. And you're like, oh, he's so cute. Oh, God.
Yeah. Doesn't he also have a prop, which is a giant round lollipop?
Yeah.
It's got a lollipop.
Fucking bite radius on that thing?
Yeah.
You got to wonder what's going on inside there.
Well, yeah. Well,
and then you eventually find out.
You find out. And it's all about the rules. You got to follow the rules of Halloween. And there are certain things that you have to do to celebrate Halloween. If you break those rules, if you blow out your jack-o'-lanterns, if you do that stupid shit, you're going to pay. Sam's going
to
get you.
And that's why it's even hard for me to feel like Sam is a villain of any kind. To me, he's kind of the hero of Halloween.
He's the protector of Halloween.
You know, the villain is the stingy neighbor that, you know,
turns his light off and doesn't...
Turns the light off, doesn't answer the door. The villain is the guy that's, you know, hiding, you know, poisons and razors and things in candies. The villain is the person that doesn't believe in Halloween. You know, that's the villain in the movie.
Sam
He's just there to show them what's up.
Sam is protecting
the dentist that puts
and enforcing
toothbrushes
the rules
in your
of Halloween.
Yeah,
like he's. I love Sam.
Okay, so
he takes
you both
no
had it,
shit.
Since you both had it on your list, what's your feelings on the sequel?
I am excited for the sequel because anthology. I didn't even read my notes. I remember the word. Anthology movies to me have great sequels. Creepshow, Creepshow 2, great. You know, because you're not continuing necessarily a story that was designed to have a beginning and an end. You're continuing a collection of stories by adding to the collection. So I think I have higher hopes for Trick or Treat 2 than I would for almost any other sequel.
I also think that when he came out with Krampus, which was a good movie, that kind of gives you hope because he did another movie that was really solid and good. So he's not going into a sequel of his own movie that's like, I don't know, you did one.
Well, he hasn't shown us anything bad. I mean, even the little animated short that spawned Trick or Treat was like super cool.
Oh, yeah.
And very awesome. It also featured Sam. And I think, I'm expecting good things.
So, yeah, it's the benefit of the doubt. You're going to get the benefit of the doubt.
For sure. In this case, yeah.
Exactly.
And I'm pretty leery of sequels, but I'm excited for that one. If they ruin it, I'm going to be pissed. Because Sam is fantastic. And he makes me happy.
Nice.
Because the little shits in this world need to understand the rules of Halloween.
There are some rules.
Yep.
There are rules.
Well, and I think that's great because no one had ever talked about the rules or thought about the rules or discussed the fact that there should be rules or anything.
There's horror movie rules. I mean,
we all kind of understood that there were certain things that you did to celebrate the season. All they had to do was come along and say, or else. And I thought that was a super good spin.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Do not blow out your jack-o'-lantern, or else.
Or else.
Right, yeah.
Well, speaking of sequels.
Okay. Oh.
Oh.
Evil Dead 2.
Oh, there it is.
That's mine. That's my number two movie, man. One, I love Bruce Campbell. He's a local boy. Eastern Oregon.
Yeah.
I believe, or something
Southern.
Like that.
He's Southern. Down outside of Medford, Jacksonville, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, digging that. And I love the story. I touched on it a little bit earlier about, you know, a bunch of schmoes getting together. Because when I was, 10 or 12, a buddy of mine had an 8mm camera.
Mm-hmm.
We did that. I've got this old 8mm film.
You had cameras when you were a kid?
Pinholes.
Okay. Pinholes and, mm-hmm. and a spinny thing that had.
And a gunpowder flash.
Gunpowder flash. And Deadwood.
In fact, there's an old horror flick of me out there where I've got this really creepy mask. It's almost like the Thin Man from Fantasia.
Okay.
And my buddy is wearing it, and I come walking in the room, and he's standing there all scary. And he throws a knife at me, which he couldn't throw a real knife at me. So he threw a sharper. God damn it, Aaron.
I'm saying, if that's a challenge,
right when I think that we're bonding, he comes up and he brings
it's
shit
to reality.
Nothing
against you. I'm just saying I would throw a knife at you.
Hmm? How long have you known this?
I'm naive. I'm naive, yeah.
You should never have a knife in your hand, first of all.
But he threw a Sharpie, like a felt pen at me. So, and it glittered in the lighting just fine. And then I grabbed it and I was like, and then I smeared ketchup all over my shirt. And I actually fell over backward. I did my very own stunt. I was my own stunt.
Nice.
I fell over backward in the stairs. You know the stairs that lead down to my man room?
Yes.
Well, we filmed this there in my mom's house at the time.
Okay.
Fell down through the door, down those stairs backwards.
Wow.
No cushion, no nothing. And I was like, great, that's awesome. So that's the horror film that we did.
Nice.
It's all of that, just that. And then about 2.5 weeks later in football practice, my shoulder was hurting. I went to the doctors, they x-rayed it, and I had a broken collarbone.
Whoa.
Which had nothing to do with football practice, but my tumble down the stairs that I had for 2 weeks.
And your career as a stuntman was over before it ever started.
So these schmoes getting together and doing films and what they were able to accomplish was incredible. I mean, fuck, Sam Raimi, you know, Spider-Man. Hercules, Xena, Drag Me to Hell, any number of things. This guy, he's brought some great stuff to the screen. So that was super cool. But I love what Bruce Campbell did in the second one. We're like, hey, we've established some really fucked up shit. We've got the Necronomica, we've got the Deadites, we've got Swallow Your Soul.
Yeah.
And then he takes it to an over-the-top element and introduces, again, iconic things that just stick into the boom. Well, the boomstick was an Army of Darkness, actually.
Yes. Yeah, it was.
Mm-hmm. But the chainsaw hand.
Chainsaw.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that the hand came alive and attacked him. And he had a whole fucking scene of him fighting a hand off and the hand smashing him in the head with plates. The girlfriend that he had to behead in, the first movie?
Mm-hmm.
That then came out of the grave, did some fucking Dance of the Dead, and then came after her with the chainsaw over her head.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing. Putting the head in a vice, and she's like, don't you love me anymore? And he's like, you got ugly really quick, you know? Just fucking just cheese camp brilliance.
Well, it went to that comedy also. So the first one didn't have as much comedy. It was more laughable when you watch it now because of back then. It's kind of not what you think of, you know, as horror. But that's where he started with the comedy a little more into it. And then Army of Darkness was that next step where it was just like blatant, just comedy.
Yeah, that set the tone for what Evil Dead was. It was that. Yeah, this shit was
well
serious.
And even innovation in the sense like the Vasicam, the Vaseline cam that they invented, which was just if we took 2x4s, strung them together, smeared them with Vaseline, stuck a camera on there, and now we have a Steadicam because we can't afford a Steadicam. I mean, they were doing innovative, actual technical things that you see just as low budget filmmaking, but when you think about it, it's like, I mean, not high tech filmmaking, but it's high concept filmmaking where those follow shots of, you know, the, I mean, it wasn't really the deadites yet. They hadn't really raised, but of whatever it was, that evil presence that was out there moving through the woods all the time and knocking down their front door and all those things. I mean, that was all done because they managed to like rig up 2x4s in a way that created a new form of filmmaking. And I don't know. Awesome
yeah,
films.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And, just the fact that they, I mean, they were hitting the streets. They were earning money for this thing. They didn't have big corporate handouts or trust funds or GOMI funds or anything like that. Totally. So, Evil Dead 2, man.
Awesome. Well, let's keep it with you. Let's hear about your pumpkin beer.
So I'm going to change things up a little bit here.
Okay.
Where are we going? You know, any fool can bring beer.
So what do you got for us, Grace? There? What do you got?
Any fool can bring 12 aged, judging eyes. You know, coveted special beers from years past. I'm changing it up with
Zima.
With some Zima.
Nice. Better be pumpkin spice Zima.
Pumpkin Zima. Do they make a pumpkin spice Jolly Rancher?
They make a pumpkin spice every day.
Yeah, but
thing.
Is there a Jolly Rancher? Because we could make a pumpkin Zima.
Fuck yeah.
That's true, yeah.
I'm going to bring to the table the California Cider Company, Ace's Pumpkin Cider. Oh. Because, you know, our podcast is all about the beers and ciders.
Beers,
from
ciders, meads, whatever. We'll drink it.
So.
Face one.
I will take just a tiny
bit. Oh, come on, Juan. You're going to love this,
it's
man.
It's pumpkin and it's cider.
I do like this one. I've had this Ace Pumpkin Cider Grace. Quite a few times.
So let me tell you a thing about this is that. The reason I picked it is because it's very seasonal. It's not just Halloween, but this is something that is going to be really delicious throughout your Thanksgiving, through your Christmas. It's not pumpkin-y. Mm-hmm. It is cinnamon. It's allspice. It's cloves. It's, you know, your hot apple ciders for the whole season.
Just be warmed, good warmed up with some bourbon in it.
This hell would really be good warmed up. It totally would.
And it just has an incredible, it just has an incredible flavor to it. I really, really enjoy it. Plus, it's also kind of cool in the sense that it was, I mean, it started back in 2010, and it's the U.S.'s first family-owned cider company.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Out of California. Back in the Bay Area of 1993, I believe.
Wow, I had no idea.
And they only do nine. They do nine in a line, and they got some very cool things that they do with some of that. It's obviously seasonal. This one here usually released after Labor Day. But what they in that nine of line, they have two limited edition beers. One of them is called Blackjack ciders. 21 or beer ciders. Thank you. One of them is Blackjack 21. Mm-hmm. That just celebrates. It's a Galveston apple.
Yeah, that one's really dry for me.
Yeah, it's super dry.
Real dry.
It is 21 years, celebrating 21 years in business. The other one they do is called Ace Space, which is a blood orange beer. It's very cool because, well, first of all, it's unfiltered. But it was created to honor the owner's wife, who actually played a character, Brie Tonica, I think.
I don't know if you're asking, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it right. It's also a cider, not a beer, but that's all right. Keep talking.
Did I say it's a beer again?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You keep trying to make it a beer, but it's not a beer.
Quit trying to sell it as a beer. It's not a beer.
But she played one of the characters in the cantina scene in the first Star Wars.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Really? The owner's wife of Ace.
It's kind of awesome. Wow.
Yeah. So that was cool. Totally cool. The way they get the results is they actually are using champagne yeast.
Okay.
And they cold filter it about four different times. So they get that really crisp, really clean, really clear product.
Ace Pineapple is one of my guilty pleasures. Their pineapple cider is, I mean, it's like the sweetest sugar bomb of any cider I've probably ever had, but it's so good. It's like drinking
A
Dole Whip. If you've ever been to Disneyland and got yourself a Dole Whip, or now they're actually making their way around in some of these Froyo places.
My first Dole Whip.
But it tastes like Dole Whip in a glass. It's super, super good.
Well, basically, if Jolly Rancher made a pineapple Jolly Rancher,
I stole the Dole Whip. Like he tried to get one afterwards. He's like, you got to try this Dole Whip. And I got it. And all of a sudden he went up there and they're like, it's out. And he's like,
he got the last Dole Whip.
Damn it. Well, you're not a cider guy, but what do you think of this one?
I like ciders that are way better than this.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Actually, it's not too bad. I've had a lot worse pumpkin beer than this cider. I'll tell you that much.
There you go.
This, it's not bad. It's too sweet for me. Like, yeah. I wouldn't want to drink a whole bottle of this, but
I love the
cider. I like dry ciders.
I think cider people fall, in one of those two categories. Yeah. You like the dry ciders, which I personally cannot do, or you like the sweet ones, which is going to be a benefit or a total
turn off. I would have chosen Spire Mountain's seasonal cider, but...
Is that the dark and dry?
No, dark and dry is damn near.
They
actually
do a spiced one.
Okay, we had at the
that's the one we
really had fish tail
in Seattle. Love the fuck out of that.
Oh yeah, you did.
Spire makes a very good cider.
Fucked that thing all night. It was so good.
Wow.
All right. Let's get our final movies out of the way here. So we are up to our number one movie.
Ooh, I feel like we need a drum roll or something
of the season. There it is.
Boom.
I guess I'll take this one. So my number one movie, and this honestly is my number one if I was ranking them.
I know what it is.
Night of the Demons, 1988.
Surprise.
Nope, it was not.
It's my absolute favorite film to watch to sell me on Halloween and his idea. And I think the main reason is, again, we've said this on a lot of our films, it really encapsulates Halloween and things. But this, to me, encapsulates what I try to be doing during Halloween. So it's these people, they get together for a Halloween party, they're rocking out the Bauhaus on the boombox. Everyone's got fun costumes. It's got a certain sense of adventure. They're all going, they're breaking into this abandoned place to house a little party and end up becoming demon possessed and things go crazy. Again, it's going to feature Linnea Quigley. Yep. So it brings back those memories, and she's such an integral part of those films.
Was Quigley the lipstick?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. No kidding.
Now,
wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That movie, the remake, actually isn't that bad.
No, I liked the remake as well.
I was saying,
a lot of people didn't, but I liked
movies
it.
Movies where I was like, okay, I can watch that remake.
They tried to crowdfund a sequel to the remake of Night of the Demons, and it fell through, and I actually went on there to back it because I was ready to go. Yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan of Edward Furlong or anything like that, but I just liked it. I thought it had the vibe of the original, just updated some. But that original film, Night of the Demons, it just sells it.
I remember when I first saw it, and if WTF was a thing back then, this would have been a what the fuck.
Yeah,
I saw this and I was like, what the fuck did I just watch? I want to see it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome. Breaking the genres.
That's my number one.
Sweet. All right, I got one.
Yay.
I got one. So my number one pick, it is an incredible, timeless, teen coming-of-age thriller.
Oh, God.
Okay? It's filled with betrayal, hope, disappointment. It has adventure.
Okay.
It's got a complicated love story. It has those elements to it. It overall centers around an occult mythos storyline full of torment that slow builds to a shocking reveal with a twist ending.
Hmm. Gremlins?
No.
No. Okay.
Close. It's close. Twilight. And it does this all in a 22-minute runtime.
Oh.
In fact, it weaves all of these elements seamlessly and delivers a complete package better than most two-hour scary movies. Ghouls and Boils, I bring you. It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
See, that's on my shenanigans list, not on my horror list.
You did not follow the horror movie rules at all.
It's not a horror movie.
That one absolutely is.
It is Halloween.
A Halloween. It evokes the emotion for me. It has all of these elements when you really just look at it.
But how is it a horror?
Sure, it's so not a horror.
It is a thriller. It is
a cold.
It is a suspense.
It is a Halloween movie, but it is not a thriller.
Yeah, but it's worthy of my number one list.
All right, that's fair.
I back you on this 100%.
Damn straight you do, Juan.
Damn right.
You can.
We got this.
Right on, brother.
Okay.
So yeah, not technically a horror movie by any stretch of the imagination. No. But man, this thing so screams Halloween. This is something that brought me along. I mean, shit, how far back does this go? This goes back quite a ways. I can't remember. 1966.
Mm-hmm.
This was the thing that I looked forward to every single Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
I had to see this. It got me in the mood. It was just... And I wanted to believe in the Great Pumpkin, man. I wanted to believe in this magical beast, this creature. So ultimately, I had to put the horror part of it aside and just to bring this in because it was the foundation for me.
You're lying.
Yeah.
You think our elder statesman.
It's hard to hear.
Track. Yeah, maybe.
You
yeah.
quit judging.
Yep. Or, you know, I don't know. Maybe back in the
if
day.
If we were going to do the whole non-horror thing, mine would be Nightmare Before Christmas because I love that movie and it's amazing and it's everything Halloween.
Nightmare?
But no.
Great Pumpkin's a better nightmare, I'll tell you that much.
Hey, think about how much torment.
Oh, it is on.
Think about how much torment Charlie Brown went through in this movie. That's he fucking torture porn right there.
Yeah. Sure.
That's torture porn.
I watched all of those Charlie Brown specials.
Did you just relate Charlie Brown to torture porn?
Kind of, yeah.
What the fuck?
What's your name?
He's got all these glory holes cut into his ghost outfit.
Porky can't even kick a football.
He's got all the...
What's her name? Pulled out every time.
These guys?
Until Peter punched her in the face and was like,
"See,
let him kick the damn ball."
Yeah. I watched the Charlie Brown specials as a kid and... The one, I don't know, there's one they go to like Paris or France or something. Yeah. There's one where they go to camp. Yeah, yeah, and there was the Easter one and the Christmas one and there was a Halloween one. And I remember liking them, but upon revisiting them, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, you know,
it was never ending storied. Or something.
It was never ending storied. I was just kind of like, wow, this is something where I it's love.
Total garbage
and then
an
I
adult.
Went and watched it and went, what the hell was wrong with
hey,
me?
Hey, Aaron, you know what's better? Trick or treat.
That's on my list, but not on my list because it's not a horror film.
No.
Grace, what's yours? What's your number one?
Mine is a horror movie.
Good job.
And it is my favorite horror killer of all time.
We'll see about that.
It's Nightmare on Elm Street. Because Freddy Krueger.
The remake, right?
I will cut your throat. The remake is bullshit because it does not have Robert Englund. I love Robert Englund.
Mm-hmm.
I watch him in his stupid shark movies on Sci-Fi. I watch everything.
Did you swaddle him?
Not saying I wouldn't.
It's not exactly like off the table.
But Nightmare on Elm Street is creepy. It's campy. It's sarcastic. It's amazing. I love it. I like that he is a horror villain with a sense of humor. He has more one-liner puns than...
So it's a comedy rather than a horror.
No. It is a horror. He's slashing people with his claw glove. Like, what?
In
no.
the later episodes, though.
It's a glove of knives.
Yeah,
well, but he also has some fantastic one-liners.
I think that's what's part of what made it so unsettling for the first film, was that we hadn't seen a killer that would come up and, like, crack a smile and tell you a joke and then... kill you.
Yeah.
So How's that was even
a wet dream.
That was way like, more no, unsettling what? Than a killer that just came in and said, "I want you dead," and then kills you. Because you're like, why is this guy taking such perverse pleasure? And why does he find all this humor in it?
It's like a kid playing with his food. Like,
sure, that's exactly
slightly
it,
more jacked up, and you're just like, what are you doing?
Well, what I love about a lot of these movies that you guys we've all put on this list is these are the ones that, I mean, every single one of these propelled. The genre. I keep saying that, but
sure.
I remember when I saw it was like 1984, I think I was a junior in high school. I watched this. And when Nancy fell back into the chair and vanished,
mm-hmm.
when the arms came across the alleyway, you know, while chasing the blonde,
mm-hmm. Which is the only part of that film that takes me out of the movie every time. And people have talked about like what a phenomenal effect that is. And
it looks pretty. Yeah,
it's so goofy.
But you hadn't seen it before.
But there's some cool effects in those movies though that you hadn't seen before.
Oh no. I mean, there was,
and I'm not, you know, I love the original just because that's what got me hooked on the whole Nightmare on Elm Street series. But I like most, not all of them. I like most of them for different reasons. And I think the series as a whole kind of delved into so many different things and different, you know, technical aspects and special effects and all these different things. Because they were just like, whatever, it's a dream world. We can do whatever the hell we want.
Fuck totally. Yeah. And for somebody at my age that loves his naps, being able to do the a bloody nap and fear that something's going to take me down.
For sure.
Fuck.
No, that's a classic, and I can definitely see why it'd be number one pick. And I know that's your favorite slasher franchise and your favorite horror villain.
I'm sorry. But I will fight you to the death. Sure. It's better than Halloween, and it's better than Friday.
The thing I like about...
But that's my opinion.
It showed me, like, Wes Craven. He's one of the few that has adapted to the times to where, like, he made the original. Then he kind of, you know, whatever. But then he did New Nightmare, which was amazing. Then he did Scream, which made fun of the whole genre, which was amazing, the original Scream.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of directors don't do that, which shows you how much of an icon he was.
All right. Well, that just about wraps up our films that we wanted to cover. I think we all have some pretty good
I think there's some amazing selections there, man. And totally. It was super cool to hear everybody's vibe on them.
I got to go over my pumpkin beer. So I'm going to do that real quick like here. I have one pumpkin beer that I am sold on year after year. And again, back when I used to buy beer, I bought copious amounts of this just so I could make sure I had enough to bring home. And it is from Oakshire Brewing. Absolutely my favorite pumpkin anything, whether you're talking cider or beer. And it is Oakshire Brewing's Big Black Jack Imperial Chocolate Pumpkin Porter. I think I got that out correctly. Yeah, it's a mouthful. I don't know how both of mine wound up being a porter, but this is from Oakshire out of Eugene. They've been around since about 2006. They've been making this beer since, I think, 2011 is when it first came out. It won some awards. It was the hit of the first couple years of any kind of a pumpkin beer fest, wherever it might be. Everybody came specifically because they wanted to try Oakshire's Big Black Jack. It has a couple things that make it stand out. And one of those things is that it uses not only pumpkin, but they also put roasted pumpkin seeds in it. They use not only the cinnamon, the clove, the nutmeg, the allspice, all that kind of stuff. They put ginger in it as well, which I think is awesome for a little kick. And they put in cocoa. Mm-hmm. So you don't get chocolate from the malts. You're not picking up that, you know, chocolateish hints. You right. get chocolate because it's in there. And because of all those things, it has become my absolute favorite go-to pumpkin beer. And especially this year when we went back and tasted a whole bunch of different ones to try to see, this one still just stood head and shoulders above everything else. Funny side note is I've been searching for this beer for like weeks now, knowing this episode was coming.
You're sweating it.
It literally released to pumpkin the Portland market
a late this year.
Today. And it literally was purchased for this podcast by Grace. Thank you so much, Grace. On her way here. So I'm very excited.
Luckily, I knew all the right people to call to figure out who got us delivery today.
Why she's our beer goddess.
Yeah, and a big thanks to Jody. I know Jody was looking for some of this for me and doing everything she could as well. So I appreciate all that. Jody's our friend. She's also the Oakshire rep for our area. So yeah, I'm really ecstatic to have this at the table. I absolutely love it, and I recommend it.
Does not like pumpkin anything. This is my favorite pumpkin beer.
Totally.
It's super approachable.
Of all time. Yeah.
It's more chocolate than
right
pumpkin.
Right above Jamaican Wheat Pumpkin from 10 Barrel, which I do like because it's Asian rum barrels. But this, by far, the best for me.
Pretty tasty.
Yeah, I'm digging this. It's got a lot of the spice in it. And that's not so much the pumpkin, but that spice that you talk about. A lot of roasted elements to it.
Sure. Let's talk about some of those honorable mentions. We've already talked about things that would be on our list if we could, whether it's a beer or a movie. What are some things for you guys that are just imperative for the Halloween season?
Well, I already sort of spoke about the Hobgoblin, Winchwood. Yeah. I would have taken that. It's an honorable mention / I couldn't find it, but man, it is so good. Tingson's Old Peculiar. Mm-hmm.
Oh my god, get over it. Yep.
But no, anything so far that I've tasted from the Winchwood brewery, fantastic. King Goblin, Hobgoblin.
Yeah, that's the only one I saw out in the market this year was, I think, the newest one, which was that Black Witch or Witch of the Woods or something.
I don't think I've tried that. So very good there. I do want to do a shout out, though. We've talked about horror movies, and I've hearkened back to the days of my youth and how it really motivated me. So I just want to throw out some real quick kids movies that I think are worth mentioning for any listeners that want to have their children and teens watch it. Cool. Of course, The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
So you watch yourself calling them kids movies. Because they're probably all on my list of things I have to watch.
That's right. You are kind of that youngin.
Youthful. He meant youthful.
You're a youngin.
Spry.
A small. Yeah. Hocus Pocus.
Fuck yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Love it.
No.
Oh,
yeah. Hater, you shut up.
There's the door. There's the door.
Miller one. And Butterface. Yes.
I appreciate you backing me on The Great Pumpkin, but you got to walk, son.
Butterface. No.
Short walk.
What is wrong with Ferris Bueller?
And then Monster Squad.
Oh, now
has anybody seen Monster Squad?
Oh, of course. Yes.
Yeah, the Wolfman's got nards.
Yeah.
Fucking brilliant, man. And then I would really love to introduce people to Don Knox.
Oh, yeah. The Ghost and Mr. Chicken.
Don, yes. The Ghost and Mr. Chicken.
Ghost and Mr. Attaboy, Chicken.
There we go.
Fantastic. So definitely go check it out. But fuck, man, I mean, so many influential movies to talk about. I mean, I could go on and on. And I've got a whole list of movies here. I mean, you got, you know, Wishmaster, Friday the 13th, Phantasm. I almost put that one on. Even Salem's Lot back in the day held up, but not now.
Not now. No.
No. I mean, you've got, good old David Soul. Was he Starsky or Hutch?
He was.
The Fog. Creature from the Black Lagoon. You know, the Universal Monsters. I mean.
Gotta have the monsters.
The 80s, you know. The Blob. Invasion of the Body Snatchers. The Thing. Yeah. Fright Night. Frighteners. God, there's just so many movies out there that are amazing that people need to dive into.
Sure.
However, my honorable mention for movies is, and this blew me away, 1949. Quality animated film, Legend of Sleepy Hollow. It's great. It's
classic.
Yeah. Yep.
Totally.
Well, you mentioned a couple of mine, but I also have a whole slew of kind of older shenanigans movies that I have to watch. I have to watch Jerry Lewis and Scared Stiff over here because I love me some Jerry Lewis. Arsenic and Old Lace.
Oh, yeah.
Will always be one of my favorites. Bell Book and Candle.
Wow, I haven't heard of
that. High Wackish Cat.
Oh, man.
Some good shit. Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Oh, shit.
Totally.
Sometimes I get classy and watch Ernest Scared Stiff. Scared Stupid, sorry. Yeah, scared Stupid.
Scared Stiff is what's
the porn
Scared
Stupid.
Yeah, that's on the list that we're doing.
Right, that's your other
list. We're
doing
list. That
list. I also totally get into Hitchcock. So I love Alfred Hitchcock. Yeah. I watch a ton of his movies. I think my favorite is still Rear Window. But I usually try to watch as many as I can whenever.
Yeah.
Right. The Boston Terrier is having a shit fit right now.
I can't
now.
Believe we talked about Hitchcock more, or we didn't talk about Hitchcock more
right?
in this one.
Well, I feel like he's
And
not...
again, we're not talking about our favorite movies or just great movies.
We're talking about horror, about Halloween.
Halloween season films. True. And I don't know that he has one that really sells the season
apparently
of Halloween to me.
Guideline that
Hocus Pocus definitely on my list. Sure. But I think my honorable mention has to be Nightmare Before Christmas.
Of course.
Yeah.
I love Tim Burton. I love that movie. It is my movie that gets me in the mood for Halloween and also for Christmas. But I'm also that weirdo that watches it year-round.
Totally.
Has the soundtrack on my iPod because I'm a dork. But, you know, it's not a horror movie, but it's Halloween for me. Yeah. It gets me excited and it's fantastic.
I love walking away with a list of movies that you guys have thrown down that I got to go check out that I've never heard of.
Totally. You know? Well, there's this cool podcast you can listen to, and you'll hear about all these films we just talked
it's
about.
Called Three Frame Brew.
Do tell.
I only have a couple because, I mean, again, I could go on and on and on and on and on for things I just like to watch, but to sell the Halloween season to me. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I could pick just about any horror movie I love, but the thing that I wanted to talk about because I love it so much, and I actually love it enough that I shared it with Lee right before we started recording, is 1952 Disney Donald Duck short.
I left
short,
it for you.
That's why I thought it was your first.
Trick or Treat, and it's 8 minutes long. It features, I believe, the first time we saw Witch Hazel as a character. Mm-hmm. It's got the nephews in one of their most early appearances.
I can't believe it's that old.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I
yes,
can't either. And it was part of what I will call my second kind of addition to my list, which was Disney's Halloween. And I think Disney's Halloween started in like 1983, 1984. I was 9 or 10 when I started watching that at my grandma's house every year. And it came on and it was hosted by the Magic Mirror. Mm-hmm. And it had the dancing skeletons. It had the, what's it called, Night on Bald Mountain or whatever it was from Fantasia with Chernabog, the big demon, had him on there. It had this short sinister scenes of different villains from the movies, from Snow White, the Evil Witch, things like that. So it was just a really cool kid's introduction. But the part of it that stuck out to me was Trick or Treat, that short cartoon. And it's almost a precursor for me of what was on my list this time, which was Trick or Treat, the film from 2007, in that it was about Donald not following the rules. Donald was putting firecrackers in people's
Donald's
bags.
Donald was being a little shit.
Yeah, he was being stingy with his treats and his candies.
You
know, he was locking
it up.
Somebody
that doesn't wear pants. Street.
And so a witch shows up to help the nephews get their Halloween treats. And she has to take some pretty extreme measures. And it's just fun. It's awesome. It has a song, which I sing to this day.
Sing us a little ditty.
Trick or Treat. Not going to do that.
Go on. Give this guy some more beer so we can drink.
You can find the short actually on the DVD of Sleepy Hollow. You can find it on the DVD of The Black Cauldron. It's also on Mickey's House of Villains. Mm-hmm. I think they put a DVD out for that. It's on that. So you can find it. It's out there. Or you can just load up some YouTubes.
Yeah, which is what we did, which was super cool.
Yeah, quality's not super awesome on those, but, you know, it's
well, but
just
that's
good.
Well, but that's, to clarify, the, for, what did you say,
1952,
the actual cartoon itself, outside of YouTube, you know, blurriness, is incredible. I didn't know they were producing cartoons of that quality back then.
Oh, yeah, it was nuts.
I was stunned.
Don't remember?
Super well, nuts. I don't know.
So that's mine. That's really one cool. that I had to mention. I think it goes out there. And also,
no, it's definitely on my list too.
For
I
kids,
love,
it's,
I love
it's something you watch just a couple minutes before bedtime, whatever, and it just leaves you with that Halloween.
Yeah, it's a total fun one for
spirit,
kids.
So super awesome. So Halloween, obviously that's what this is all about.
This was a lot of fun.
It super was. And we planned this episode so it would come out early in the month so that people could have time to go and find one of these movies, find these beers while they're still on the shelf.
Yeah.
So, you know, this will be coming out beginning of October. So let's talk a little bit about what we're doing for Halloween.
Yeah,
have
because
some awesome plans.
Not only do we have like just a crap ton of beer in front of us that we get to enjoy for the rest of the evening, but we got some things going on over the next couple of weeks.
We certainly do.
Yeah, I myself, probably first and foremost, am really excited about being able to go trick or treating. Mm. I get to go trick or treating with Rose and her son. And I haven't been trick-or-treating in a while, so I'm totally going to milk
this. It's
kind
of frowned upon at your age.
Nope. I'm going to milk it.
Well, without a kid with you, it's frowned upon.
I got a kid now,
do me a favor
and
come by here, because we get like 3 trick-or-treaters the whole
they
night.
They give out like 6 king-size candy bars to every kid, except for the Snickers Deanne steals.
Underestimating. We literally get like 3 people.
Yeah, I get like 2. But we're thinking about dressing up as Teen Titans.
Oh, that'll be cool.
So Liam's going to go as Robin.
Okay.
And Rose is going to go Starfire, and I'm going to go as a green ape, Beast Boy.
Okay. All right.
So we'll see if we can actually pull that together.
I know we've got, we already mentioned Goblins coming, so we're going to go check out Goblin. That's going to be incredible.
If you're at a Fright Town, at least a couple times.
The Haunted Houses.
November something, November 11th, somewhere in there. We're going to see our screening of Suspiria. Which we're all going to go see. I think that's December 2nd. And then The Thing, the 30th anniversary of The Thing. We actually were there.
Is that next week? That's
a couple years back for the 25th anniversary of it. We watched it in the same place.
I just recently did a ghost hunting thing with the Portland ghost tours of the Shanghai tunnels here in Portland.
Cool. Did you go to Old Town Brewing?
We did.
Yeah, they have
Old Town Brewing.
Entrance.
I learned that there was a graveyard on one of the parking lots that we have now, and at least the way the gal spun it is that they relocated the bodies, but it's not 100% guaranteed that maybe a few ankle bones or knuckle bones didn't remain. So that was kind of cool.
Dun, dun.
Right?
Watch out for them knuckle bones.
I did get to see kind of the breakdown of what the crimping tunnels or the Shanghai tunnels look like in these basements, which is much, much more hyped up than it really is.
Oh, for sure.
But when you're down there and they turn the lights off and you got an EMF reading device, it's kind of fun.
Definitely. The underground tours in Seattle were also quite cool for that same reason. It's just a glimpse into a different time and something you don't know is there when you're just hanging out at Pike's
place. They apparently – there's no tunnels that connect buildings anymore. They've blocked them all off.
Oh, sure.
So you can get hints of it. But so just – and she was telling a really neat story about how Ghost Hunters did a filming there, and they made it look like there were like massive tunnels. They were like, here we are in the Portland-Shanghai tunnels taking lots of readings, and the cameraman would get up above the guy, and he would get down on his knees and then walk really close to the wall. Oh, and so it made it look like this long – so anyway, so that was a lot of fun.
Smoke and mirrors, everybody.
Yeah, smoke and mirrors. Hollywood magic.
Yeah. Next thing you'll be telling me is they're not actually capturing real ghosts in those places.
Oh, the dream shattered.
So yeah, that's going to be awesome. We're headed to Southern California to do the Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights and Not Scary Farm. We're going to do their thing down there.
I finally pulled the trigger on it and manned up.
Yep.
And I'm going to get on a plane again. Woohoo. Nice. Fucking bullshit.
It's all worth it. It's all worth it. So yeah, we have a lot of stuff coming up this season, so that's going to be awesome. Hopefully we'll be able to talk about that a little bit more.
Should also check out Frighttown, Baron.
Yes. Go to Frighttown. Oh my God. I'm so excited Frighttown's coming back. He had me so scared when he said it was gone. I was worried.
That's why I'm like, we have to give a plug to Frighttown because we love the Baron.
There's a lot of haunted attractions here in the Portland area. If you're in this area at all, or you're in Southern Washington, or even if you're in Central Oregon and you're doing the School for the Deaf, I forget what that one's called. There.
It's out in Salem.
Nightmare Factory.
Thank you. Yeah, Nightmare Factory down in Salem. If you're doing that one,
door and stuff.
Drive up here, go to Frighttown. It's that perfect mix of what we've been talking about tonight, which is scare and fun. It's not just there to make you pee your pants. They're not just, I'm sure they're delighted when that happens, but that's not the point. The point is for you to go out and enjoy an evening, have fun, and get scared in the process.
And support somebody that has a passion for it locally.
Oh, yeah. The Baron.
Yeah. And then don't forget to do the again.
Secret pro tip. Yeah, if you're down in there and you've gone on all three mazes, you can go over to their concession stand and you can slip them $5 and they will give you a new ticket and you can go on all the mazes again.
What?
So, again.
Yeah. Yes.
For only $5.
Do you have to say anything or do you just like hand them a $5?
Oh, no, they have really signs for it. It's just people don't really know about it.
And they miss it.
Yeah.
We took Natasha on it once and she got freaked out because she's like, what's the
I once went again three times on one night. Right. So I did all three mazes four times each.
I did not know about that. I would love to do that because as I said earlier, man, I love just going into a haunted house and saying, all right, turn on the lights. Let me see what you guys have done. Let me see your creations. Sure. That's why I love the fun house. Well, it's not the fun house. What is it? The Museum Curiosities of...
You're talking about Baron Bungalow's Museum.
That one.
Yeah.
Where you go in there and, man, I spend probably 20, 25 minutes just in the first room.
Oh, sure.
Looking at all the props and the...
Werepug.
Oh, fucking cool stuff.
Yeah, and you can tell that he understood that that's something we want to do. So he built an entire room in the middle of a haunted maze where you could just stop in that room and hang for as long as you wanted and just look at really cool and fun and quirky and oftentimes quite hilarious props and things. So, check out Frighttown. Our biggest endorsement goes to Frighttown up here in Portland. I think that's about it, guys.
Yeah, this has been super, super cool. I say we have a Halloween special every podcast.
We should.
I don't know if you guys can handle this many beers every podcast.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah.
I was going to say, all right, let's turn out. We got a lot of bottles to finish.
Hold my beer. No, wait. Give it back to me.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. We hope you have an awesome Halloween season. We'll be back before Halloween with another episode. In the meantime, you can check out what we're doing at dreadfrightandbrew.com. You can also find us at facebook.com/dreadfrightandbrew. We're on Twitter at dreadfrightbrew, no and. Send us a comment, give us ideas for future pairings, tell us what we're doing that you love, tell us what we're doing that we should really stop doing. Just, let us know what you're thinking out there. We really want to hear some feedback from the fans and possible fans for the future. You can find us on iTunes, on Google Play Music, and at TuneIn. So if you're on any of those things, please give us a rating, give us a review, and the best thing you could do for us, honestly, if you want to help us out, is just subscribe.
Yeah.
Subscribe, catch those new episodes, and keep on listening, because we don't plan on stopping anytime soon.
Love to hear from you. Yep. Need to have my murder mug filled.
Okay.
All right, we're going to refill our glasses. Till then, happy Halloween.
Peace.
ha